with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! We are. It is the 23rd day of December 2014. Ah, you're kidding. Well, it is. No, I'm not kidding. It is the 23rd day of December 2014. We're sending. This may take a minute. All right, give me a sec. Sorry about this, but we're going to have to wait for a minute. Waiting for my colleague Rick Smith to close his end of the stream. My apologies. Yeah, so I've already run through the intro. I did all that before I realized that we were not sending out to the stream. But y'all have heard that part before, right? Well, howdy, and I guess I do have to do the date again. Sorry, podcast listeners. It's the 23rd day of December, 2014. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. Okay, yeah. I am, right. And welcome one and all to this night before the night before Christmas edition of The Horn. Okay. And we do have we've got a merry band gathered together already in the Horn chat room. Anatola's with us. Good evening, News Ninja Carol Baker. Good evening, Doctor Who. Good evening, E. Kofer. And thank you very kindly, E. Kofer, for your recent help. That's much appreciated. We came into the program this evening needing to raise $360, and we now need to raise $310. That is much, much appreciated. Good evening, Gerald and Jeremy and John. Good evening, Kathy and Laborman. Good evening to both incarnations of the indefatigable, inveterate chat room moderator Sparky, both Sparky and Man Cave. Good evening, sentient being, and good evening, Texas T. I'd love to say good evening to you if you too are in the chat room. Just run on by HeadOnRadioNetwork.com and jump right in. It's free, it's easy, and it is, of course, fun. Yes, indeed. Also, like I said, we're trying to raise $310 this evening. We'll try to raise $250 tomorrow evening, so 365. We got a $560 tab to raise because, you know, we're short this week because of Christmas and the day after, and I explained that last night, so I don't have to do that again, right? Okay, good. So, you know, the PayPal interface is over at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute. But if you wish to operate by mail, and part of the reason that we started out at 360 instead of 460, which is where we ended the night last night, Well, that's because of the help of our good friend Johannes Zum. Is that the right German preposition? Johannes Zum Colorado? Yeah, okay. But anyway, thank you, John. Thank you very, very kindly. So there we are. We are trying. We got $310 to go this evening, $250 tomorrow. If you know, hey, if we could get it all out of the way this evening, that'd be great too. I would be thrilled to pieces because I would then engage in a frenzy of further bill paying. So either way, if you just shoot me a note if you're operating by the mail, so I can tell Boss Man Wayne he won't have to put on his spider-proof gloves when he reaches into the box that is off an echo chamber. Okay? Okay, and remember, checks, money orders should never be made payable to Bob Kincaid, but to the Horn, or Head-On Communications, something like that. Because I never see him. Let's see. Now, it is 10 minutes past the hour. It should be about 5 minutes past the hour, but sometimes we have these little hiccups when Rick Smith, Rick is apparently, well, sometimes there's a technical glitch. Shutting down the Horn stream access that Rick has so that I can take it back over here. And, you know, I just hope Rick has a happy Christmas. I really, really do. A very happy holiday, whether it be Hanukkah or Christmas or Kwanzaa or Saturnalia or some Zoroastrian affair or, you know, pick one. Or just the solstice. What a pity we don't celebrate the 12 days of Christmas or Saturnalia or whatever. That would be fun, wouldn't it? Anyway, thank you very kindly, Jeremy. Jeremy noting loud and clear on TuneIn, and I do appreciate that. Festivus, how could I forget Festivus? This is, in fact, Festivus, and only minutes ago I was watching the live stream from, I believe, the Wisconsin State House Rotunda as people were airing their grievances against Scott Walker. It was beautiful. And there, okay, Gerald, that's good. How about happy non-denominational holiday? How about happy family time? Or if you can't stand your family, how about happy alone time? It's just, you know, this time of the year, the turning of the dead sun to the new sun, the rising sun, the coming of the sun, tonatiuh, in one of the languages of this continent. Yeah. Oh, we're getting an early start. Okay, there's a... Ignore the bad spelling tonight. I've been drinking. Again. No fair getting out in front. No fair at all. That's cheating. So, anyway, it is Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. And I was before I hit the send button and then the record button and everything, I was chomping at the bit to get behind the microphone and get going. Because, the way it works here is I read all day long. I read all kinds of stuff. People send me stuff. And I'm constantly reading, reevaluating, collating, stacking, unstacking, shuffling, playing solitaire, just trying to figure out what goes where. And one of the more frustrating things that can happen is to come up to, you know, just a little bit before airtime and get the show program rewritten for us. Well, that happened this evening. And a reminder, this is, as noted, Titanic Tuesday. We call it Titanic Tuesday on the Horn because it is named after a remark made by a 962nd tier right-wing blowhard blatherskate moron over in the Beckley radio market, Beckley being the fifth smallest radio market in America, who took a call, one and very stentorian, he read the newspaper to everybody every morning, and it was radio to watch paint dry by. Caller, you're on the air.
Yes, Dave, I just wanted to know what it is there's like seashells that you can see inside the rocks in West Virginia. We ain't got no oceans nowhere near, and I done seen a clamshell one time.
Well, caller, no kidding, it was our buddy Jim over in Beckley who heard this and reported it to us, and we have no reason to doubt the veracity of it. As the 962nd tier right-wing blowhard said, well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates. No word yet on the movement of the Titanic napkin rings. So, consequently, Tuesday's program, as sort of a carryover, because there's always carryover from Moran Monday, Tuesday's program became sort of a carryover from Moran Monday, and we call it Titanic Tuesday to celebrate the Titanic intellect of the right wing. The Titanic prodigious intellectual powers of the multi-million dollar broadcasters, of the million dollar foundations, the think tanks, the Heritages, the CEIs, the AEIs, the Catos, and all their little minion politicians, and all the way down to the shock troops in the culture war that one can find on any given day in the comments section of just about anywhere. Remember, Nicola Post. So, right, Titanic Tuesday. Prodigious right-wing birther, deather, tenther, tea-bagger, booger-eater, bircher, libertarian, repig-licking intellect. You know, the really smart ones. And so this was one of those Halcon days when everything seemed to be going perfectly and we were all set up for a nice Titanic Tuesday, and then right there, 5:15 p.m., we get the rewrite dropped in our laps. But that's okay. I can deal with those because many and many a year ago, down in the little village risen from the ashes called Atlanta, it was something that would happen from time to time. We had to write a 5-minute newscast on the hour every hour over the course of an 8-hour shift, and you know it takes a little bit to write 5 minutes worth of copy, and of course you overwrite anyway. But then something would break at 10 minutes till, and it's like rewrite, you know, on the keyboard. I mean, you know, those two-fingered typing journalists just going away. Oh yeah. Beat the hell out of those old keyboards back in the late 80s. So I'm okay with the rewrite. And we got the rewrite dropped in our lap about, oh, I don't know what time I sent the tweet. But it was, and it can't be ignored. And I know some of you object to this sort of thing, but I gotta. Because it is Titanic Tuesday. And this is Titanic. I mean, this is prodigious. This is multi-million dollar wisdom. Do you remember a couple of years back when it was announced that a new movie in the Thor franchise would be made? Granted, I watched the first Thor movie. It didn't do much for me, but hey, the family loved it. I guess I just don't go there. Well, they made a sequel to the Thor movie, whichever studio it was. And in the course of making the sequel, whoever was in charge of casting cast an individual, an actor, as Heimdall, Sentry of Asgard. And just, you know, because these are imaginary characters and they're imaginary gods and everything, the people in charge of casting the role of Heimdall, Sentry of Asgard, cast a very, very talented actor by the name of Idris Elba as Heimdall, Sentry of Asgard. That is when the Council of Conservative Citizens, notice the sound that the C's in Council of Conservative Citizens make, yeah, you're on the right path, had a hissy. And they started a boycott. They had a website and everything because they were incensed because Idris Elba has dark skin. And we all know that all the Norse gods look like Abba. Damn it. Even if they are imaginary, they're imaginary white people. Well, they went on to made the movie. The world did not collapse. We were not plunged into the heart of the burning sun as a result. No, it was just a movie. But, yes, the Council of Conservative Citizens and a whole bunch of other wingnuts, Nicola Post, chimed in to explain exactly how furious they were that one of those people would be cast as a pure, upstanding Norse white god. Still with me? Yeah. So, re-enter Idris Elba. Played a role to perfection on HBO's The Wire. He's been nominated for numerous awards, Best Actor, nominated for 3 Golden Globes. He's won once for Best Actor. He's had 4 Primetime Emmy Award nominations. I mean, and he's English. Yeah. Right. What was it some right-winger said once upon a time? He's one of those English African-Americans. Stop. But so, get the hockey puck. Get 2 or 3 trips around with the duct tape. Enter $50 million a year professional broadcaster and street prescription narcotics addict Rush Limbaugh. Because he's, now see, as Sandra noted last night, I really couldn't give a rat's rear end about Sony or Amy Pascal, or and in point of fact, there was an announcement today. It was published in the New York Times. Oh, they're going to show it, and they're going to show the interview in some movie theaters. And all of a sudden, because I've got this little Hollywood PR flack who's desperate, and I can hear him or her in the back of my head saying, no, this is going to be perfect. What we'll do, we're going to make sure that nobody shows the film, then everybody's going to want to clamor, and they're going to holler First Amendment about us, a corporation. Ah! And then we're going to say we're going to show the film, and we're going to show it in a limited release on Christmas Day, and it'll be the hottest ticket in America. I asked earlier, in fact, if Sony owned the rights to all the old W.C. Fields movies. I don't know, because it certainly seems like they've been studying at the feet of the master. Remember, we are adherents here, or not adherents so much as acknowledgers of, and I find them much more useful than the Ten Commandments. We acknowledge the reality and the effectiveness of W.C. Fields' 3 commandments. 1, you can't cheat an honest man. 2, never give a sucker an even break. And 3, don't smarten up a chump. Well, unless you walk, as long as you don't walk through, see, that's the neat thing. Rules 2 and 3 never come into play unless commandment 1 is violated. If you don't walk through the door to see the interview, then you cannot be subjected to never give a sucker an even break and don't smarten up a chump. Many, however, will, and they'll do it thinking that they're being heroes of the First Amendment. Yeah, it's delightful, isn't it? So anyway, back when whoever it was hacked Sony, they found Amy Pascal's crappy emails about the movie watching taste of President Obama, and there was a certain ethnic overtone to it, and after which she had to white apologize. Well, that's true, too. There's another one out there. As Carol Baker notes, Fields said never to work with children or dogs. Carol noting Rush falls into both categories. Or junkies. Well, I don't know. Anyway. So, I'm getting somewhere, I promise, I really am. So among the other things that got hacked, were some movie plans that Sony had for other properties. One of the properties that they own is the James Bond franchise. Now, there will be one more James Bond movie featuring Daniel Craig. It's called Spectre, and it's out next year. After that, though, it's time for a new Bond because his contract is up, and no one gets to be Bond forever. So guess what Sony came up with? They decided to take a step toward diversity and cast Idris Elba as Bond. This did not sit well with America's truth detector who chews up Oxycontins for the refreshing burst of flavor and has half his brain tied behind his back and talent on loan from God. Margin call. Right. Thanks to the little internet miracle that is Media Matters for America, we go to the clip.
One of the emails that leaked in the hack of Sony, Amy Pascal, the co-chairman of Sony Pictures, in an email thread back and forth, I forget who it was, she suggested that when Daniel Craig's run as James Bond is over, and this is it, this is contractually his last film.
I'm really not kidding about the hockey puck, and you might want to, and once you've got the hockey puck in, you might want to strap your feet to the chair and at least one arm. It's kind of hard to hurt yourself with one hand. And who knows, you might have a Zen epiphany and find out what the sound of one hand screaming is.
She suggested a new James Bond. And I'm not sure how you pronounce the guy's name.
No, wait.
Idris Elba is what it looks like on paper. Idris Elba.
God damn it! It's IDRISELBA. It's not 19 consonants of vowel and 17 more consonants, okay? IDRIS, 5 letters. ELBA, 4 letters. I'm not sure how to pronounce this. You know why he says he's not sure how to pronounce this, the oxymoron? Because several years ago, before he had ever seen a picture of him, Flush Flimball got caught referring to a candidate for the Senate in Ohio by the name of SHERRODBROWN. He didn't have any part with the problem with the brown part, but because Flush Flimball, in addition to just marching around Jones half out of his mind on the street version of pharmaceutical opiates, assumes that everything is a Negro conspiracy against him, he pronounced the name of S-H-E-R-R-O-D Brown as Sherrod. Sherrod Brown. Another Negro running for office. Sherrod Brown. So now, fast forward a few years, half a decade, I don't remember how long, but now he sees IDRISELBA. He knows the guy's black. But I'm really not sure how to pronounce it, my friends. Now, Yes, my wife down in the pit is doing fine. I lowered her down as her second day of Christmas gift today. You know, yesterday I gave her Bed Bath and Beyond, especially the... And I told her if she did not put the lotion on its skin, I would send her on to the Great Beyond. Today, for further skin softening efficacy, I lowered her down some artisanally crafted loofahs. Did you know those goddamn things are gourds? Really? Yeah, they are. Just like my head. So, yeah, Idris Elba.
Jessen.
Because he's not sure how to pronounce it.
A new James Bond. And I'm not sure how you pronounce the guy's name. Idris Elba is what it looks like on paper. Idris.
Oh, look, he can. Oh, we're so proud.
Idris Elba, who is, well, I can't say African-American, he's British. African-English, right? African-Brit.
I told you! I can't call him African-American, he's African-English. Can't just be an Englishman. Oh, hell no. No. Right. Jesus Christ. I tell you what, sit on the other hand. Just kind of wedge it in under the thigh that you've already strapped down to the chair because you're just going to be kind of rattling back and forth. Don't tip the chair over, okay? I'm warning you, it's a long clip.
He's black. He's from Great Britain. He has played. He was on The Wire. And he was in a British cop drama procedural called Luther. Did you watch Luther? What, Luther on Netflix? Sam, I have it. I didn't watch it. Okay, here's the thing though. James Bond is a fictional character, obviously.
Nice of him to notice. Won't slow him down a bit. Randy, meanwhile, says, this is breaking news? Never mind what's happening in Ukraine. Well, obviously, Randy, you already know what's happening in Ukraine. So, I got to do that again? You see how it works. Ron and Raleigh noting, they could watch all the Hobbit movies. I guess it's not enough that they could watch all the Hobbit movies close to 15 hours and not see a face darker than an orc. Did you hear a bleeping word from black folks complaining about that? Nope. And it doesn't do any good if anybody does anyway, because then Rupert Murdoch just says, well, all the Egyptians on our what? How about you? Exactly. See how that works. I'm really going somewhere with this, I promise. We have a game to play. Michael and Madison ask, wait, you're telling me this was Sony hack news? Because I've been hearing this rumor for at least a year, if not longer. He'd make an awesome Bond, and it's probably just Sony reacting to what movie fans have been suggesting for a long time. Well, it hadn't... I don't pay quite as close attention, and apparently neither does Flush Flemball. Jesus Christ, we've got something in common. I have to go kill myself. Anyway,
James Bond was invented, created by Ian Fleming, a former spy, MI6, and James Bond.
Wait for it.
Is a total concept put together by Ian Fleming.
Yeah. Okay. Wait for it.
He was white.
There it is. He's a fictional character, but he's a white fictional character.
And Scottish.
He's a white Scottish fictional character. Michael and Madison noting, when Flesh said, I can't call him African-American, he's English, it's like he can read his thoughts. Can I still call him a, and you know what word? Yeah. I wait all night for calls like these.
Period. That is who James Bond is.
Except that you really can't use who James Bond and the verb is, because the verb is part of the verb to be, and James Bond can't be, because James Bond is not, come on, real.
Yeah, you're right on track. You're right on track, Carol. Just stand by.
Was.
No, not was, not is. Not really.
But now Sony is suggesting that the next James Bond should be Idris Elba, a black Briton rather than a white from Scotland.
From Scotland. The old country. Right? Anybody? Hands, show of hands. How many Scots James Bonds have there been? If you answered one, you are correct. Sean Connery.
But that's not who James Bond is. And I know it's racist to probably even point this out.
Then why, Rush? Why? Because you're a racist.
But the franchise needs to get with it, right? The franchise needs to get hip. The franchise needs to get with the 21st century.
The franchise needs to get hip? Why not, Flush, say that the franchise needs to get keen, or neato, or groovy, or the bee's knees? Oh, you are just a cultural barometer, aren't you?
Well, that's right. We have 50 years of white Bonds because Bond is white. Bond was never black. Ian Fleming never created a black Brit to play James Bond. The character was always white. He was always Scottish.
You're just kind of yearning for him to say, God damn it, now, aren't you? And the reason I find this interesting is because it's got a pedigree in right-wingistan. The Concerned Citizens Council that I mentioned a few minutes ago. Or as Michael and Madison points out, Megyn Kelly last year, Santa is white. Jesus was a white man too. No more, no red or yellow, black or white, they are precious in his sight. Jesus let, no!
He always drank vodka.
So? What's the implication there, Flush? That Idris Elba's James Bond's going to drink Mad Dog 2020? Old English malt liquor, maybe?
And shaken, not stirred. And all that. Okay, so we're not.
The culture is coming to. The culture is crashing. The culture is collapsing. The flag is falling.
We're supposed to have a problem with this. I mean, it's a movies. Come on, we've had 50 years of white James Bonds. We need to spread it out. We need to be equal. We need to be fair about this. Okay, fine. Let's play a little game.
Oh, we're gonna. We are so gonna.
Jay-Z's favorite? How would I know what Jay-Z's favorite drink is?
This is what's happening as his producer is talking into his little bionic ear thingy. Just so you know.
Ah, what would that be? Cristal? Yeah. Well, how about in the movie, we know we're going to get one. How about in the movie about the Obamas? There's going to be one. How?
Really? We've gone from Black James Bond to movie about the Obama. What? Note from Jeremy in Vermont. Bob, OMFG, I'm driving in somewhat heavy traffic. Road rage could happen any moment. Oh, F Turkey Neck Rush. Look, this is classically Titanic Tuesday material. Carol pointing out, if it's any consolation, I'm not big on change. I like my conservatives fat, white, and bloviating. And that's the way they'll always be, Carol.
How about George Clooney play Obama and Kate Hudson play Michelle My Bell Obama? How would that do?
Michelle My Bell Obama? She's a Beatles song now? Not even gonna. Can't make me.
I mean, if we're going to do this, let's imagine it. Nelson Mandela movie. Another, you know, there's going to be an Idris Elba played Nelson Mandela. And Nelson Mandela was black. But the movies can do whatever. Kelsey Grammer as Nelson Mandela. How about that? We're just...
Astonishing, isn't it? Barack Obama is a real person. Michelle Obama is a real person. Nelson Mandela was a real person. James Bond is not a real person. Bilbo Baggins, not a real person. Frodo, Dildo Bugger, you know, whatever. Not real, not, there are no hobbits, sorry.
Playing here, ladies and gentlemen, Al Sharpton. There will be a movie.
You knew there had to be an Al Sharpton reference, right?
Al Sharpton story. Who do we get to play Al Sharpton? Because they need two or three of them at various... how about Rob Reiner? Rob Reiner to play the early Al Sharpton with the bullhorn and megaphone and all that. General Colin Powell, Colonel Colin Powell. There's going to be a series of.
Powell's been demoted.
TV documentaries or movies. How about who would it be? How about George C. Scott? He played Patton.
George C. Scott's dead. See, this is... Quit that, Carol. Danny DeVito is Al Sharpton. Quit. Just stop. see what opiates do to your brain? See, this is why Nancy Reagan had that whole Just Say No campaign. What a difference it might have made in Flush's world if he would have just gotten high once upon a time instead of chewing them up for the refreshing burst of flavor. Yeah, I know.
I know he's dead, but what does that matter? We could reproduce him cinematographically.
Cinematographically? CGI George Scott. Okay.
How about, let's see, Condoleezza Rice. We do a movie on Condoleezza Rice. You might be thinking that we would have Halle Berry. No. Scarlett Johansson. Scarlett Johansson will, all she has to do is take some piano lessons, she's got it. Scarlett Johansson is Condoleezza Rice. Michael Sam.
What the hell does Meryl Streep have to get a little love from Rush Limbaugh? Oh, enough of this silliness. You get the gist of it. But I have a game for us to play this Titanic Tuesday. Rush wanted to play a game. So do I. Only our game is going to be a lot more fun and a lot more broad in scope. Yeah, by the way, Michael and Madison pointing out, everyone knows that vodka is instantly fatal to men of African descent. No one will buy it. Barack Obama, Nelson Mandela, James Bond. What do they have in common? all are real people in Flush's mind. Except Barack Obama, who is a Kenyan Muslim usurper, whose real name is Barry Sotero. Right? Luda pointing out that it might be an old email, but I know recently Daniel Craig had his contract extended to more movies, which will make him the Bond with the most movies. This thing I just read says that his last film will be the 2015 Spectre. Sean Connery will still be the longest-serving Bond, but from a brown perspective, why does he have to be a black Bond? Brown people exist, too. Get in line. Get in line. I mean, I remember, who was it, Tab Hunter? That was tapped to play a Native American back in the 50s, and not just it, like a famous one. I've tried really hard to put that film out of my mind, so please forgive me if I don't remember whose memory he they. Yeah, you get, yeah. So we're going to play a game now, and we'll play it all night long. It doesn't. We could move on through other stories, but we'll play the game all night. And the name of the game is Roles People of Color Are Not Allowed to Play Because It Would Offend Rush Limbaugh. That's our game. Here, I'll get us started. The entirety of the Shakespeare collection. Shakespeare wrote you people one role. Can't you be happy with it? You get Othello. Shut up. That's how that works. So that's if you want to call in or email or Twitter at Bob Kincaid, Facebook or on the Horn Facebook page, however you prefer to do it. That's tonight's game. And, you know, we'll be giving out free for the really good stuff. And just, you know, be thinking about it. Roles people of color are not allowed to play lest it frustrate and infuriate America's oxymoron. Do you already have some nominations, Carol?
Bob, I'll take Jesus for the Daily Double.
Oh, Jesus! Absolutely! No. Jesus can only be played by people of the purest, most white complexion.
You mean not ecru, not beige, but, oh my God, the glare!
Exactly. I think one of the Winter brothers is still alive. He could qualify.
Oh, that albino one?
Yeah, well, they both
would. Edgar.
Yeah, I think Johnny's the one who's gone, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's what we'll go. Jesus. Never Jesus. Idris Elba cannot play Jesus. Maybe we need to narrow this down, Carol. Maybe it needs to be because they've had a hissy over him playing, what was the name of that god? I don't remember any. Amway, god of, yeah, anyway. So, so we've narrowed the game down now. It is now roles Idris Elba is not allowed to play lest it offend the delicate racial sensitivities of America's oxymoron.
Jesus. For $1,000.
You win again. How about St. Paul?
That one, too. By the way, in the movie Time Bandits, I want you to know that Sean Connery played a Middle Eastern man.
Really?
Yes. Did you ever see that movie about the little midgets?
Yeah, I don't remember that. I don't remember that particular.
He was the fireman, and he also played, like, the Bedouin in the desert.
Well, and one of my favorite films, The Man Who Would Be King.
Yeah.
Sean Connery played a Sufi, mystic, Middle Eastern madman.
That's right.
And that's how they got up the trail toward the Khyber Pass.
That's right. Jesus, I'm betting all my chips.
Okay. Well, I tell you. Oh, wait. You've got competition, Carol. Jeremy and I made you snort. I'm so proud. I'll have you down to Betty Rubble in no time flat.
It won't take long if you keep making me scream Jesus.
You've got competition, Jeremy in Vermont. Superman. He's a white American, and okay. So what if he's an illegal alien? And well, you know, Superman can never be played by anyone with dark skin.
Well, Jeremy gets to play his sidekick, Captain Obvious.
Absolutely. So we've got Jesus and Superman, who, when you get right down to it, in the over in the cultural studies department of some godforsaken liberal university, we find out that they're really the same person, and along with Frodo, you know, they're all Christ characters, and Aslan the lion. No, Idris Elba can't play Aslan the goddamn lion either.
That's right. And Brandt in the chat room, I'm afraid I'm going to have to disqualify you for this game. He said Robin Hood, and I'm sorry, everybody knows all blah people are thieves. So.
Oh! We're going to.
Next.
Yeah, next up. Up, oh, no, yeah, right, okay, Kathy. No, Idris Elba cannot play Sherlock Holmes. And E. Kofor, Idris Elba. I don't know, would we let Idris Elba play Will Smith?
Huh?
Has Will Smith become, like, you know, white? No, because we're still we're still not letting him kiss the white women. Let's see. Other people.
I was just told to piss off.
Well, there was that warning earlier in the program that people in the chat room have been drinking, Carol,
and imbibing in other things.
Let's see. Okay, so no Jesus, no Saint Peter, I presume.
No.
Idris Silva can't believe.
No Christian, no prophets, no. I mean, that's kind of all.
No, so right, and just to be sure, because I did kind of do an all inclusive oeuvre of Shakespeare thing. No Julius Caesar, no Mark Antony.
No.
Okay, no Romeo. Because then he'd have to kiss a white girl, right?
Oh, absolutely.
So Idris Elba can't play Romeo. Can't play King Lear.
No.
No. Damn it. No, oh, no. Well, you think Rush might make a dispensation for letting Idris Elba play Hamlet? Because, you know, he does kill himself in the end.
No, I believe...
No, somebody kills him.
I get that, but it's the whole idea that, you know, Hamlet does figure out that his uncle has murdered his father, and he does call his mother a whore, and that's so white bread. So I'm not sure that that would qualify, but, you know, Othello was a black man.
Right. Why can't they just be happy with that?
And, you know, so I think once you've had your token Shakespeare character, that's enough.
Oedipus?
Oh, yeah, because he does his mama.
So, okay. Well, that goes on the short list. Okay, let's see. Any Dickens characters of it? No, I can't think of any Dickens characters available. Abraham Lincoln?
Oh.
No.
I don't think so. Ronald Reagan.
It would be
great. Nikki Goldenheart, very nice. No black man could play Ronald Reagan.
Oh, but that would be delightful, because it would make Ronald Flush Limbaugh's head just, you know, like one of those Martians on Mars Attacks inside the little fishbowl. Just the Slim Whitman music plays, and there goes Rush's head.
I just hear it now. Mommy, you're going to be the first bitch.
Well, Mommy. Okay, so Ronald Reagan. No. Hey, wait. Maybe he... No, we'd never allow him to be cast as Patton in the movie version of Bill O'Reilly's Killing Patton, would we?
I don't think so, because... No conservative hero could ever be played by a wrong colored.
Oh, this is. There are so many. There. Your fellow news ninja Gene. No Captain Kirk.
Oh, he, he kissed Nichelle Nichols on national TV. First interracial kiss. He is disqualified.
Okay. No Spock.
Spock was into green chicks, I think, wasn't he?
He's green blooded. I mean, at least that's according. So McCoy and wait. How about Scotty? No, no, because Russia's already told us he's not Scots.
No true Scotsman.
There you go. What are you using those glasses for?
Nothing, Pa.
Then put them down. You're wasting them.
By the way, I have a lot of Scottish blood. Any chance of a bond with boobs?
You know, look, don't push it. I mean black men got the vote in this country before white women did. Now, you just want to jump in front of the line, Carol? I mean, come on.
Well, you're right. When I think of how many years we had to wait to get to be emancipated after the blah people, I guess 70 years from now will be our turn.
Jeremy pointing out he can't play a black-white supremacist because Dave Chappelle nailed that one.
Yeah.
And here's a big cultural riff, Carol. Michael and Madison pointing out Idris Elba cannot play Doctor Who. And he said, I win. I think he saw your Jesus Christ and raised you a Doctor Who, Carol.
Nobody raises Jesus Christ. This is America, Dad.
Yeah, because he raises himself, right?
That's right.
Oh, we'll be here all night.
Yeah, that's why we don't do two shows a night.
Leave the veal the hell alone.
But tip your waiter.
Oh, would we let him play maybe Gandhi?
No.
I mean, he got to play Nelson Mandela.
Well, Ben Kingsley.
I mean, we're talking about the J.J. Abrams reboot of Gandhi, okay?
I know. Yeah, you could probably get a wrong color to play Gandhi because, God, that bastard loved to protest.
Let's see. What else we got? How about Jawaharlal Nehru?
Well, yeah, because he was another one of the... He was one of, you know, Gandhi's... Right-hand men. They were all wrong colored, you know. Just ask the British. They were black. They were called black.
I love it. The angry Indian just pointed out, I bet Rush would let him play Caliban in the misanthrope in The Tempest.
I'll bet he would.
This is rich. I mean, we have tapped a rich vein.
It is. I have to get off and let someone else play. Because this is fun.
Oh, by the way, I did get corrected, Carol. Roger Moore was the longest serving Bond with 7 and the worst. George Lazenby was the shortest.
But nobody said pushy galore like Sean.
Yeah. Well, sure. You gotta put that SH in there.
Absolutely.
Ron and Raleigh pointing out that King of Kings is on tonight featuring Jeffrey Hunter. My favorite Jesus, though, Max von Sydow. Oh, what a lovely list this is going. You know what? I'll probably be getting emails all the way to New Year's of roles Idris Elba is not allowed to play. Oh, dear God. Can you imagine if Rush Limbaugh had any power at all?
I know. He can't play in the remake of Norma Rae.
Oh.
I gotta hang up and hear the next person going because this is too good.
Wait. I got it. You're gonna hang up, but I got it. Idris Elba cannot play Atticus Finch in the reboot of To Kill a Mockingbird, Kill Mo Mockingbird.
Okay, that's it. Ding, 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 ding. That's cowbell worthy.
Oh, thank you. I don't think I've ever given myself a cowbell before.
Was that yours?
Yes, that's me.
Oh, damn. I have been bested by my swordsman.
Ah, well, you see, I too am not left-handed.
Oh.
My name is Inigo Montoya. Can't play Inigo Montoya either!
Oh, that's right. You killed my father. Prepare to die.
Can't play Gerald Ford.
No.
No, no, no. But we really do want him for Reagan, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think this is the most enjoyable game we've played since Meet the Feetles.
I miss that.
Yeah, that's for you. But cogitate on that. We may get more songs out of that. God knows. I think Michael and Madison wrote practically the entire album on Meet the Feetles.
Oh, this is too good. We're gonna have to put together a reel of the best of.
Oh, it's a 10-year effort. I mean, Jesus Christ, this is worse than Michelangelo on his back trying to paint God. Okay, all right. Michael and Madison has now conceded his Doctor Who win with Atticus Finch. Yeah, you definitely win. Oh, thank you, Carol. Thank you. Thank you for playing. We'll have some sort of lovely parting gift somewhere down the road.
Oh, every gift is a lovely parting gift. Hey, by the way, I found something for you in the store today, and I bought it for you, and it's on its way.
Oh no!
Cajun cheese curds.
Stop it!
Yes, they're in my refrigerator with your name on it, just for being a good random citizen.
Oh my God. And I bet they're squeaky.
They are, because I ate the ranch ones already.
Yeah, you found them. See? Yeah, and it's the squeaky that makes them, isn't it?
It really is. I just thought I'd throw that in there, you know, because it's Christmas and shit.
Well, I'm jonesing, but since you did open that door, I have to mention that another part. This has been Feed Bob Christmas.
That's good.
Another box arrived today, courtesy of our dear friend Steve in New York City.
I make it a policy never to inquire about your package, but what was in it?
Well, yeah, right, I understand. it was a huge box. You know, it was like the next size up flat rate box from the U.S. Postal Service. See how the endorsement advertising works there, U.S. Postal Service? This could be happening for you all the time.
Not that
we take ads. No, and in it was this wild selection of vacuum sealed, fresh from the New York bagels.
Ooh.
There's raisin bagels, and there's poppy seed bagels and sesame seed bagels. There's a bagel with freaking oats on it. There's everything bagels. There's onion bagels. And I cracked into a poppy seed the minute that I got home, you know, split it. It vacuum sealed, so they were kind of, you know, but they just sort of puff right back to life as soon as the air hits them. Little time in the microwave, bang, into the toaster, hit it with the, okay, granted, I was sort of looking for the lightning bolts because I was putting Piggly Wiggly brand cream cheese on a New York bagel, but I'm okay so far.
It ain't schmear, but, you know.
But, oh, my God, it was fabulous. Just, yeah, okay, bagels are ruined for me now, thanks, you know. It's kind of like what cheese curds do, and it's what, yes.
Cajun cheese curds, they're on their way.
Yeah, Gerald pointing out, by January 4th, 2015, Bob Kincaid's cholesterol will be at 687. Enjoy.
So will his weight.
I came to terms with the fact that I was powerless over cheese. And my life had become unmanageable, okay? I'll get back on the wagon shortly after the national championship football game. But I am not giving up my goddamn Rotel if Alabama makes it to the national championship game.
Oh, right. And, like, if I sent you Cajun cheese curds, you'd go, oh, no, I can't.
Yeah, say, no, sorry, no. Yeah. I just flip my little token over to the milkman, and he grins and cackles merrily, and, you know, I dive into the cheese curds.
There you go. All right, so you have a good night. I'll talk to you later.
See you, Carol.
Carry on, Hornedanistas.
I'm going to try. You try. We'll all try. Bye. News Ninja Carol Baker, and I think we've got a rousing start to roles Rush Limbaugh will not allow Idris Elba to play. Yeah. Timothy pointing out, I think Rush only named real black people because he doesn't consume any entertainment with fictional black protagonists. I think he was actually naming every single black person he knows of. Did he get to Ben Carson and Alan Keyes? By the way, Sean Connery also played Juan Sanchez Villalobos Ramirez in Highlander, which I only know from a Craig Ferguson bit. Oh, my God, I forgot about that. He did. Idris Elba, Timothy points out, is forbidden from playing Sherlock Holmes. No blah person is allowed to play Tickle Me Elmo too soon. No blah person is allowed to appear in the filmed version of the musical version of the making of Michael Jackson's Thriller. The lead has been promised to Justin Timberlake. Oh, yeah, I know. There's all kinds of hell and damnation cracking out all over the earth, but it's the Christmas season. Please, can I just get to laugh once? Jesus Christ. Hey, Angry.
Oh, hey, man. What's shaking? Are you okay?
Oh, I'm all right. God, I love this. This is beautiful. I'll be better soon.
All right. Well, where do you want to begin?
You jump right in, man.
I've been in and out until, you know, I just sat here the past 20 minutes and heard Carol and, you know, hate Carol. Frankly, this is not new news. You know, that has been bandied about for the better part of a year, as somebody else mentioned, that, Alba has been, pretty much slated to be the next Bond after Craig steps down. But the one thing that I'm not hearing anybody fucking talk about, though, is what the fuck is James Bond? What does James Bond represent?
Is that, isn't there? The oppressive white colonialist, the skullduggery, and yeah.
That his whole thing is supporting British imperialism. And I'm telling people as a writer, I have actually researched Fleming, and I've read most of the books. And, I've read books against, there were several books written by the clergy in the UK and Canada against the James Bond character because they felt that it was giving men license to be bastards. It's very difficult, and I love intelligence jazz, but, it's really difficult for me now to enjoy a Bond film because he's really a brute when it comes to women. Which really wasn't so much in the original stories. He actually modeled Bond's appearance on Hoagy Carmichael. I don't know if you remember him.
Yes, and he chose the name Bond because he thought it was the most dull, blasé, boring American name he could find.
and this is somebody who was working in British intelligence, right?
Right.
He maneuvered his way up there in naval intelligence through the auxiliary corps. And, he dealt with American intelligence. And that is what the British thought of them.
Well, right. Because American intelligence is always stupid and bumbling and ham-fisted and, right?
Yeah,
can't tie their shoelaces without killing themselves.
You know, the women and the flashy cars, when you're supposed to be low-key, British agents were respected for, you didn't know who the hell they were, unless they told you. Supposedly, rumor has it, if you read the books by British spies who have retired, like Spycatcher, that is a pretty controversial book because it tells just about everything about a lot of the inner workings of MI5 and 6. Because he was searching after the Cambridge what was left over from the Cambridge fallout. Nobody really gives a damn about that. But anyway, Alba. Okay, fine. So here's a black man, and really one thing about Limbaugh that he's saying is somewhat true. But he's not going to elaborate on this. It is, if you actually read the books, a bit ridiculous. When you really actually understand the story, because a lot of his psychosis and his idiosyncrasies have to do with his father being Scottish, and who he hated, and his mother being French and Swiss, and he had problems about that, and he was, you know, pretty much raised in Switzerland, you know, I mean, there's all these little things. So, yeah, in a strict sense, it would be a little idiotic if you really wanted to push it, if you really want to be strict about it. But at the same time, what you're raising and what a lot of other people are raising, and again, nobody's mentioning the imperialism about this, much less the capitalism about the entire franchise of the movie and what this whole thing is representing. You know, John Wayne played, you know, how many non-whites, right? The Conqueror. Right?
Genghis Khan.
Genghis Khan. I mean, I look at that now and I'm just like, fuck, man. You know, it's like, you know, to look at
this. That's all you can do. Fuck.
Hey, I mean, you know, there's all kinds of
things. I'm like, sorry. I got to laugh. I got to laugh. I was doing okay till I got to John Wayne. Oh, God.
Well, sorry. You know, compare Yul Brynner, who was of Russian descent, of mixed Russian descent, who was raised in China, playing Taras Bulba.
Yeah, right, alongside Tony Curtis.
Although, oh, yeah.
You underlined the cancel of my quarter.
Right, a Russian Jew, right, you know, who did not, you know, culturally in any way, shape, or form, and if you really watch those films, they didn't even really try. Charlie Chan was an insult to Asians. They like to say that it was respectful, and I suppose it was, given the context of the time that it was made. You know, we can say that that was a forward-thinking movie. I mean, I've defended, and I've gotten a lot of Asians have been crossing me about this, Suzy Wong Revisited, because I said we didn't really consider other, you know, media representations of Asian women at that same time period. They were all negative. Now, and the fact that she was a prostitute, okay, yeah, I can understand that. But she actually met a white guy that told other white people that they were racist bastards and the fuck off, which you didn't see in these other movies. So, you know, they were trying to make a social statement, but of course, you know, because, you know, people have been putting up with so much celluloid violence for so many goddamn, you know, generations. I mean, the first film to be shown at the White House was Birth of a Nation.
That's true. I'd forgotten that, but that is absolutely true.
And when I was in school, you know, this is what was drummed into us, you know, in the artists, in the creative world, that, you know, this is the number one goddamn film that the United States has ever produced. This is number one fucking film ever. But they don't tell you about the protests at the time from the black community, from the black churches, you know, and from white people who were like, you know, what are we trying to say? That these traitors, the Klan, these traitors, these Confederate fuckers, that we're supposed to honor them, and because they didn't win their rebellion against the government, that this is why the country's going to fall apart. And of course, nothing fell apart. The sky didn't fall down. Nothing happened.
Nope.
You know. No, I'm sorry. You know, I mean, what? Some Africans got some Republican seats in the South for a little while. A few people were elected sheriff, but they weren't allowed to take office in many instances. They weren't allowed to take the floor. There was a boycott, I remember. What was it? The Senate or the Congress, where they... it was whites of both parties refused to seat the black Republican who was just elected during Reconstruction.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
They pulled a shotgun.
The time that I was, I got to tour the National Voting Rights Museum down across the river in Selma. You know, there's an entire room with nothing but photographs of all the men, and they were men, of color, who were elected during Reconstruction to state government. And a person of color would not be seen in those state governments again for 100 years. Now, here's a little something we can sort of weave into the tapestry of our conversation, Angry. Have you seen the study that came out in the last couple of days about the ethnic genetic makeup of the South?
South?
Well, the whole country, as a matter of fact.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, but it's really in the South. And why is that? You know, a lot of people ask me, why do you look the way you do? I'm like, you know, you're a dumb American, you know?
Well, but two really things came out of that. One, South Carolina has the blackest white people in America.
Uh-huh. Are you surprised? I'm not got
that. I'm not. I mean,
Charleston. I got family down there. That's gullah country, boy. Well, you know, I know for a goddamn fact. I know for a fact. You know how many people look like me down there? And you know, there are, I mean, sundown parts of the Sea Islands, of Sapelo Island.
Oh, yeah.
Where, you know, I didn't know any goddamn thing. I'm coming from Philly, and they said, look, man, you know, you need to go. And you really need to stop talking to people like you know them. You know, like the white folks that were next to me. Because, you know, if I'm standing outside the OTB or something in Philly, and I'm like, hey, man, what's going on? You know, you got the time. They would tell me, you can't do that. And, you know, that was in the early 80s.
Yeah.
So when this comes out, Craig Cobb had the same kind of wake-up call, right? He's 11% sub-Saharan African because, you know, they want to separate Arabs from blacks.
Right.
And Berbers and so on.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, what are we going to do? You know,
Wait. Before we run too far afield, Angry, there's another statistic that comes out of the story I read about the just how black white folks are in this country. The blackest white folks in America are in South Carolina, and no, nobody's wondering why. But there is a polar opposite to that. Where in the United States are the whitest black folks? I've only read
pieces of it.
Sitting in it. I'm here. West Virginia has the whitest black folks in America.
Well, for the same reasons it went on in the further down in the South.
I don't know that they are.
Well, you know, let's just put it this way. You know, a lot of folks, you know, who like to look at me and my wife, because, you know, we're both, you know, very genetically cosmopolitan, and they'll be like, oh, you know, maybe when more people look like you two, you know, the world would be better off. And it's like, well, you know, you're not really thinking about a lot of things. For one thing, when people actually meet and get together and meld, you know, in a natural way, that's cool. See, in the case of a lot of the black men that I grew up with that were from the South, you know, they would, you know, be, you know, as we would say, black as midnight, but their eyes are green. You know, and yeah, they're not from New Zealand. And, you know, there's a lot of people like that. And a lot of folks, you know, why do you guys look so different? And, you know, I go to the black community, it's kind of weird, you know. I mean, someone, just being honest, this particular woman was from, I think she was from Arkansas. And she's like, you know, I've never been in a black community. I've never really been around black people. And she goes, everybody looks different. She goes, where I'm from, people kind of look the same. And I'm like, well, we come from different backgrounds. That, you know, black, you know, is not black. You know what I mean? You know, this is white in Europe. We talked about this last time we spoke. It's not white, you know. And you know, this discussion, a lot of people think, well, we make James Bond black. Well, this is going to ease things. Bullshit. No, it actually lends to a lot.
Come on. I mean, I was. I'll go ahead and use it. As you've noted, and as Michael and Madison noted, this has been bandied about for a year, but it just popped again because Sony is trying to make lemonade out of lemons.
Uh-huh.
All right. And so what this is, because we all know about Amy Pascal's snotty little email about the viewing habits of Barack Obama.
Uh-huh.
This is blackwashing. No, okay. See, she said that, but she apologized, and we're gonna give you a black James Bond, okay?
But see, here's, you know, and the only reason I want to stop you there is because that's what I want to get to, and I don't want to take up all your time to get to it, is that we have Obama, right? We had Colin Powell. No, they're looking at Colin Powell now again because of this torture report. People like you and me have been talking about Colin Powell for what, the better part of two goddamn decades. He was part of the cover-up for Milo.
Milo, sure.
That's how he got it. You know, he was part of Army intelligence, right? So, you know, here we go that, you know, when he got up there, it was because there was a hell of a lot of noise being made in the black congressional caucus about we never see a black man at these tables. We never even see a Mexican, right? You know, so they're like, okay, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? So they looked, and I'm telling you, this is the way it was told to me by career military men. They looked for the number one cat that they knew would not make waves, and that was him. And again, like Obama, there's a little, you know, people who don't really understand the African experience don't know the beast and the differences and, you know, disparities that we have amongst each other. He is a Jamaican black man. Jamaicans do not really look very well upon Africans in North America.
And speaking of which, in your earlier discussion about Ian Fleming, where did Ian Fleming write all those Bond novels?
Jamaica.
Jamaica.
From Goldeneye, his private estate. He loved to be served by black folks. He had a regular routine. He would write for like an hour and a half in the morning, and, you know, after his first cocktail. And then he would just go on through the day like that, swim a few laps and whatnot.
Right, and it's a resort now.
Yeah, see, someone had told me that, but I wasn't any. They did that with The Prisoner, too. They turned that area into a larger resort now. But the place they shot the, I can't remember because it's in Portsmouth, Wales, somewhere. But and who really gives a damn? But, you know, one of these things is, you know, we give you Idris Elba and his Bond, and he's defending white society, white culture, white power. White universal power, because we all know, again, if you read anything written by anybody who ever worked for British intelligence and is pissed off now and has written a book, everybody in the UK that is part of that community, they know who they really work for. So this is just propaganda all the way around. And then they will have him do this for a few, you know, for a few more seasons, and then that'll be the end of it. So if you're a black man and you're talking about imperialism, colonialism, you know, the white person who doesn't read anything, doesn't, you know, has an iPhone but never thinks to look, you know, at the international news, doesn't use a translator to read, you know, papers maybe that you don't, you know, like the French or Italian press, then they don't know what the hell is going on. All they know is, well, you know, there's been a black man as president, a black man as James Bond, a black man as Secretary of State, black, you know, person is this, that, and the other. There's nothing for you motherfucking niggas to be complaining about any goddamn more. So we don't want to hear anything. Because, you know, these people in the Philippines or Thailand that we got in these shops or factories or in China, like, you know, just last night on Twitter, got into it. These people are all this, you know, Cuba's terrible and you're terrible. You support Cuba. And I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? And they going on and on and on. Or they torture. They torture. I'm like, the fucking U.S. goddamn torture report came out from the Senate. What the fuck are you talking about? You know, and they're just going on and on and on. You know, no reason. And I mentioned China. I'm like, you know, they force people to fucking work in China. I mean, they got a bigger gulag actually the U.S. is bigger pound for pound, but, you know, the official idea of the gulag, they ripped that off from Stalin, and they've been running that for the longest. They lock their employees in where they get these goddamn iPhones, where they manufacture
phones. Right, and the latest expose is that you've got people so exhausted that they're napping at their workbench.
Yeah. And there's a film, I can't remember the name of it, it's about 5 minutes long. I'll send you the link if I can remember where it is. And it just shows the masses of these people in Asia. And they're like moving as one. But it's thousands of them. It's like a sea. It's like worse than THX 1138. Thanks, Carol. See, now you got me going to these cultural references. Right? If anybody remembers that film. Or The Trial, you know, Orson Welles and Tony Perkins, where it's just like a sea of you know, this dull, you know, humanity. They can't move. That just can't move. The original Frank Metropolis. You know, all of those scenes. That's today. That's 2014 in China. And if these people do not do what they're told to do in China, what happens to them? And then he's going. Then I mentioned Saudi. They behead people every goddamn day down there in Saudi. They're beating or pulling somebody's toenails out every day in Saudi. All right. They're abusing people's children in front of their parents in Saudi. So it's like, what the hell are you talking about? Burma, Yemen, Egypt. I can continue to go on down the goddamn line. He ignored all of them. It was like several of them I got into it with. They ignored all of it. And then, you know, the one of them was about Ronald Reagan. I'm like, Ronald Reagan, let me see. Rios Montt. The Contras. Iran goddamn Contra. You know, trading
arms
for hostages. But see, none of this, you know, when you're dealing with the right-wing mind, it's just, you know, it's impossible. Really, if you're dealing with anybody that wants to not deal with reality. So, you know, I'm not really completely tripping because, you know, Alba might play Bond. I just see the bullshit because, you know, the average black kid out here is worried about getting murked by a damn cop every fucking 28 hours. And then we're being told to be like Obama. And then if you try to be like Obama and you get a decent fucking car, they stop you all the fucking time. You know, I mean, I've worn suits, man, and I still got goddamn stopped, you know. And it's like, you know, nothing you do. So now they're going to give us James Bond. So now they're going to give us James Bond. So that means now we're going to want to work for the agency? We're going to start wanting to work for 5 and 6? so we can go and oppress our brothers? That's pretty funny, because when I first started writing about Obama in 2007 and 2008, I compared him to the Roman Emperor Septimus Severus.
Yep, I remember.
Right? Because I said here he was, the, you know, a North African who became, because Rome was just like what we got now. It was cosmopolitan. Trade and goods and religions and ideas and literature and what have you flowed throughout the empire. They had their differences, but information and so on was available. And, you know, they were used to that concept of racism. Of course, they had a racialism complex, but it wasn't the same way it is now. You know, it was more based on language and culture rather than appearance. And you got to remember, too, just like Beethoven. Beethoven, if he was walking down the street today, people would probably walk away from him. His features were not black, but he was not what we would typically look at as a white person either. But he was a normal European for his time period, right, because of the cosmopolitanism of where he was living. And, you know, it's not impossible for a black man to be James Bond. I mean, obviously, we're going into the fantasy here because, you know, as Limbaugh tried to back himself up, you point out, you know, we look at the genealogy of the man. It doesn't fit. So evidently, they're going to rework this somehow. He's going to be raised by Scott and his French Swiss wife. You know, obviously, that's how it's going to go. And if they do that, that's fine. But the other thing that I'm concerned about is I have friends with you know, children who are telling me that, you know, vampires were going at it with Abraham Lincoln, that vampires are running around eating cowboys.
Oh, I know.
That there were zombies all over the place. They take these things as history. And there's really nobody out there telling them that this isn't real. You know, so a lot of us who grew up like my father would make me sit and watch Gung Ho. You know, I knew who Aldo Ray was. You know what I mean?
Yeah. By the way, we did have another nomination come in, angry. Idris Elba is not allowed to play any of the Cartwrights on Bonanza.
No, they would have a conniption out there in La La.
Might let him play Hop Sing.
No, but see, you know, again, you know, if he was slated to play Winston Churchill in theater, I have no problem with that. That makes sense. And you know, and there's more to theater as far as I'm concerned, because I dig theater.
Well, you know, I'm just a nerd, I guess, because I figure that, I mean, I've seen Richard III done. Well, Annette Bening played in the film version, and the guy who plays Magneto or whatever, you know, great British actor, was in it, and it was brilliant. And it was Richard III done in the 1930s British royal court with, you know, with the backdrop of, say, Edward the Whichever's penchant for fascism.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Ian McKellen.
Yeah, Ian McKellen. Thank you. Yeah, yeah. And you can do that. Every director who's ever wanted to do Shakespeare has started. I've seen Shakespeare done with nothing but bare bones scaffolding on the stage. That's why it's Shakespeare. You know, I've seen Oedipus done in three-piece suits because these are fictional pieces that have stood the test of time, and I'm not comparing any of these to Bond, but they're fictional pieces that have stood the test of time, angry, because they convey universal human truths, or they portray universal human foibles, and they show the consequences of certain behaviors. And so, you know, that's why I started the program with this, because it just shows, I mean, we're having our fun, but the most basic analysis of this is that A, Rush Limbaugh does speak for the entirety of white America. Now, I hear all kinds of people constantly disavowing Al Sharpton, you know, because Al Sharpton is the whipping post for white frustration and angst right now.
No, well, he's been for a long time, actually.
And yeah, but I mean, it's really, really ramped up. I mean, he gets a mention in that clip from Limbaugh. But the fact of the matter is, when Rush Limbaugh says something, and then some right winger disagrees, that right winger will, in short order, find himself, unless he wants to stop being a politician, apologizing and kissing the ring of Rush Limbaugh.
Mm-hmm. Well, Glenn Beck has that same power. I mean, I have not respected the ADL and Abe Foxman ever since they apologized to him after everything that he has said about Jews. I refuse to forgive Abe Foxman for that. I refuse to. How dare he apologize to Glenn Beck after he has insulted Jews time and time again? You know, because I'm saying it like that because really nobody gives a damn when Africans and, you know, natives and in many cases Latinos, and that's going to stop once they get enough political power to make that shit stop. But, you know, there's a lot of factors that come into play here. Now, like we were talking about theater and film. Now, I know this is not going to make a lot of sense to a lot of people at first, especially if you've never had the experience of theater, you know, seeing ballet, you know, live and what have you, you know, in a real amphitheater. When you leave a theatrical...
Yeah, no Henry the... Yeah, like I said, no Henry V. No. Absolutely not.
It can be To Kill a Mockingbird, whatever. To see people, to actually hear their voices, to be present, to share that experience with other folks in the dark like that, it changes you. I have never seen a play that did not make me think, that did not change me when I walked away. Now, you can, like, watch a film, and it will frighten you. It may even give you a complex. I remember in 1973, New Year's Day, 1973, I remember this like it was yesterday. They released The Exorcist, and some of my neighbors were starting to rip pages out of the Bible, and they were pasting it on their walls. I mean, there were people flipping out all over, over the country.
Yeah, Just like people stopped going swimming in swimming pools over Jaws, as if great white sharks were going to come through the chlorinator.
Yeah, and it showers over Psycho. I've known people who still tell me that they, you know, have a hard time taking showers because of that scene in Psycho. But what I'm saying is that, you know, when you're dealing with a photograph, when you're dealing with film, video, whatever, you are limited by that box, by what you see. So a lot of folks, for the most part, are not conscious of the fact, even though propagandists are, people like Glenn Beck is. That's why he uses that board, like he's talking to a bunch of children in school on Little House in the Prairie. He does that for a specific reason. He knows that people who are frightened and who have small irregulars and are afraid of the dark, they need to see visual things in order to comprehend something. Most people... All propagandists know this. That is why large text, large fonts are used on propaganda posters. They don't give you a whole lot of information. It's just enough to make you think about what it is that they want you to think about. Nothing else. When Hitler started doing a lot of this, this is where most of these people get this from. Like Kuntz. You know, this is where most of them get this from. He would put out paintings of him on lithograph sheets, if I remember correctly, that just said, yeah, yes. Just his image and just said yes, nothing else. Goebbels was not a dummy. They knew what the hell they were doing. And, you know, putting up a black James Bond like this is the same thing because it's not going to stop any of the imperialism, none of the colonialism. We have a black president that hasn't stopped what the hell is going on right now. You know, remember that audio I sent you earlier that was caught by TMZ?
Actually, I've got it in the list. Should we bring that up? Shall we bring that into the conversation?
Yeah, why not?
Okay, so check this out. I'm gonna roll it. This comes from an Elks Club in California. And I warn you, no kidding aside, no talk about hockey pucks. This is disgusting. This is within the meaning, well, within what Potter Stewart said about obscenity. This is obscene. I don't know what it is, but I know it when I hear it. So out in Glendale, California, they got an Elks Lodge, and the Elks Lodge was rented out a week or so ago for the after party to a charity fundraiser golf tournament. The golf tournament itself was thrown by a retired LAPD officer by the name of Joe Myers. He was on the force for 32 years. He retired in 2007. The after-party dinner at the Elks Lodge was attended by 50 to 60 people, half of whom were retired police officers. An individual by the name of Gary Fischel, F-I-S-H-E-L-L, a lodge member at that Elks Lodge, who fancies himself a parodist, was the entertainment for the dinner. And an individual who was there and was shocked that, and this is, and again, I point this out from time to time about really awful video, really awful audio. It's not so much what's being said, because that's awful enough, but it's the fact that it gets said and no one objects. So in the middle of this song, someone who does object and is shocked that no one else is objecting turns on their cell phone video recorder, and this then is what you get. I hope. Yeah, here we go. Can get a little slow around here. That, of course, via TMZ.com.
Who I normally, you know, because of the way they follow, you know, celebrities around.
Yeah, I run from
salacious stuff, you know, I usually. But, you know, same thing with the smoking gun sometimes. But in this case, I have to commend them. I thank them.
That's journalism. That's journalism.
Yeah, but see, but they're probably going to catch all kinds of hate mail and what have you now, you know, just like they're coming after the Mall of America protesters. You know, they want to charge these people. They want to charge these people. And now the NYPD, I'm just seeing this on Twitter right now, they've filed some kind of federal thing where they can stop, where they want to stop all the protests. They can just arrest you without any warning. Just walk up and say, yeah, you're protesting, and take you in. We're talking about a police union rep, Pat Lynch, is that his name, right, that I'm talking about? Because I've been reading about him the past few years. He just basically said that they are at war. They're on a war footing. With who? Now, Gerard and Amanda Miller, and I should even be, you know, getting upset about this, but it's the illogical aspects of this that bother me so much. Gerard and Amanda Miller said that they were starting a revolution. They shot and killed two professional law enforcement officers on the job who were just doing their job.
Right. Well, the same thing with the two officers who were killed in Bedford-Stuyvesant. They were on break, weren't they? I mean, just sitting in their car.
Well, whether they were on break or sitting in their vehicle talking about their wives, you know, or maybe doing in somebody. What, they didn't do it yet. You know, I'm trying to be objective, which is something that they are not doing. Because you mentioned Al Sharpton, right?
Yeah.
They are not being objective. They're showing a goddamn gang mentality. I know it when I motherfucking see it. So, you know, they're going to sit here and yell and blame the mayor, de Blasio. They're going to blame him. It's not his goddamn
fault. Well, and the sad thing is Patrick Lynch is outside the reach of the police commissioner because he's risen into the leadership of the union and therefore he's getting a paycheck from the union. He's not, you know, he's not a working cop anymore.
Yeah, but Colonel Morris Davis, if you know who I'm talking about, I follow him on Twitter, and he published a photograph last evening showing Lynch in uniform, which he was saying under the military code of conduct, you know, you could be dinged for that.
Yeah.
And, you know, nobody really knows what's going on, but it's the same thing we see with Bob McCullough, if that's his first name, over there in Missouri. We all know now that Witness 40 was not a witness.
Witness 40 was a mental case.
Yeah.
And I don't use that as an insult. I use that, really.
It's a what is, right? Now, here it is. I've already had people defend her to me, you know, all Republicans, not all of them white, by the way, who are like, well, she has a mental problem. You can't hold that against her. And I'm like, well, that's funny. That was a total nutcase that did in those two cops. Oh, no, no, no. He had a vendetta. I'm like, well, he shot his girlfriend earlier that day. And do you know, Bob, that nobody is talking about her?
No, of course not. Here's precisely what I heard about her. She's still in the hospital. I hope she's all right.
Yeah. Well,
and as Sandra pointed out last night, she is, you know, she's a member of the military. She's a member of the reserve. She's not a former. She's an active member of the reserves, last I checked.
See, I didn't even know that. And that just adds even more. How come these support the troop bastards? How
right. Where's the Wounded Warrior Project?
Well, I know they don't give a fuck anyway, especially about black women in the military. Lavina Johnson, remember her case?
Yep.
You know, nobody helped her or any of the other white and Latina women who were working for Blackwater, working in the military. I mean, it's a goddamn thing. When I'm standing in the, you know, this is at a social function, and this is somebody who's been in the Navy most of his goddamn life. He's out now, and he's telling somebody, this young guy was like, well, I'm thinking about joining the Navy. He says, don't, son. And I'm like, what?
Oh, I can't tell you the number of people who have reached out to my son. Because see, you know, here in a lot of the South, not just Appalachia, but a lot of the rural South, but in West Virginia, it used to be your choice. You had a binary choice. If you were young and male, military, coal mines.
Coal mine, yeah.
Well, the coal mine jobs are drying up, and Ferg was thinking about the military, and I cannot tell you how many veterans reached out to him and said, "Don't do it." And those aren't just like, you know, Vietnam era draftees,
yeah,
who were part of a conscript army. We're talking about people who were part of the volunteer professional military who said, "Don't do it."
Yeah, because the gentleman I'm talking about, I mean, you know, he's a conservative, but we really get along. He's not a bigot, and we can really get along. And we talk, and he always has kidding me because, you know, we could have used somebody like you because you give a damn, you know. And I'm like, well, not me, because I'd probably get in trouble. And he's like, well, no, but that's what keeps the Navy legit, because we question each other. He said, if I can't trust the guys behind me or whatever, I can't get my job done. And that's not happening, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just, you would think, okay, you just kind of get the job done and be fucking professional would be in the fucking police forces. But it isn't. It isn't. You're looking at thugs. They act like a goddamn gang. Every time somebody...
Well, and Josh, you know, Josh Marshall pointed this out over at Talking Points Memo earlier today. Long piece, serious thought, you know, thoughtful piece. Charlie Pierce did the same thing, talking about, you know, looking at this torture and the way the police are behaving as examples of militarized insurrection against civil authority. And the entirety of the governmental structure of this country, flaws and all, is at least, and I think it's a good thing, premised on the idea that the civilian structure controls the military structure. And that's how you don't get military coups all the time.
Yeah, well, that was the whole point of not allowing the military to run around on American soil, because you can look south and you can look across the water and you can see the examples of where they didn't have that dividing line. And when the generals decided that they're taking over, That's it. Now, it's not because they decide, well, yeah, we're going to take over because we actually know how to run the system. No. The corporate community, like they did with Pinochet, says, look, we chose you. You run the army. The army is the muscle. Go out there and do it. Every now and again, they'll put a businessman up there because it makes it look legit in fascist societies. But for the most part, this is, you just laid it out completely. You know, people think fascism is everybody walking around wearing, you know, really stylish, you know, Adolf design uniforms, walking around stiff and robotic all the goddamn time. That wasn't the deal. Portugal had fascism. Greece had fascism, you know. Italy had it and told it to go the fuck away after a goddamn while. You know, everybody else had to fucking fight it off. You know, if you ask the average person today about the Spanish Civil War, they can't tell you anything. And that's a damn shame, because that's when fascism really started to make its, you know, its
well, that was the focus group for fascism.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, granted, Italy went into, what, Libya?
Well, he was going to do that anyway. He went to Libya, Ethiopia, and they were beefing with the Germans, what was left of the Germans anyway in Namibia at the time, because they wanted to spread the empire. He wanted to rebuild it. So, you know, we're going to go to Africa and rebuild it. They can't fight back. There was really nothing to take. They can't fight back.
Yeah. By the way, note coming in from Ron and Raleigh. Ron says, I'm just glad I live in post-racial America. Things are so much better now.
Well, again, if you have a cultural new moniker of a black James Bond, black American president, right? You're talking about Pax Americana, the whole idea of American exceptionalism, the one powerful state, the grand chessboard, blah, 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 right? APAC, all of that. Or PNAC, right? All of this alphabet soup stuff. You will continue to have that meme have weight, that we're in a post-racial society. Just like I mentioned Rome earlier. Yes, they had a different concept of race, but they still had racialism.
Well, they had race was not an invented concept yet, but they did deal in ethnicities. I think that's probably a more accurate and more manageable term for purposes of discussion.
Yeah, because you never really hear them talk too much other than descriptive terms. I'm talking about Herodotus, maybe.
Well, no, I mean, look, like, I mean, I think I've mentioned before that one of the things that served as a constant stone in Gnaeus Pompeius Magnus's shoe was the fact that he was constantly mocked by the optimates of the late Republic for the quality of his Greek. He did not have good Greek, they thought. And you know, they really seriously judge your ass on that.
Like the French do today.
and the fact that he looked Gaulish. In other words, fair hair, fair eyes. Mm-hmm. Kind of, you know, chubby. His portrait bust still exists. And you can see, you know, he does. He looks like a Frenchman. So they, you know, they recognized that kind of thing, but they, you know, they recognized money a whole hell of a lot more, because they would eventually give Gnaeus Pompeius Magnus what he wanted because of the massive amount of wealth that he had accumulated. On the other hand, bless his poor heart, Cicero was about as Roman as they come, except for the fact that he was a new man from the countryside.
Yeah, which was another issue.
And his money, he had, for all intents and purposes, they felt like he had shit on his sandals.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And they treated him accordingly. And he was driven by the fact that he felt like he could never accumulate enough money. And because he was treated as a new man, he was never able to entirely break free from his fascination with the 1%. I mean, we invented the Western culture invented the term nouveau riche to describe, again, new money, and the old money looked down on them, and that's 2,000 years worth of that. Angry, okay? That's 2,000 years worth of that. And so economics was much more a factor than ethnicity, but ethnicity did play a role. You know, you really have to see the expanding tentacles of the British Empire to begin coming up with genuine concepts of race and superiority. As you and I discussed, I think the saying was about Churchill that the wogs began at the English Channel for him. I mean, Churchill did not write a history of white people. Churchill wrote a history of the English-speaking people.
Yeah, well, he always made it very, very clear. He never apologized for being an imperialist. And he felt that colonialism, he didn't, you know, mince it. He goes, oh, it's not for
And he was a goddamn racist. I mean, there's no getting around it. I mean,
yeah, he didn't like Jews. He didn't like, you know, Arabs. He didn't like Africans. He didn't like the Irish. He didn't like any goddamn buddy, you know.
He only liked Americans because his mama was one.
You know, how many people know that his mother was from Brooklyn, New York? I was going to say Brooklyn, Texas, but Brooklyn, New York. And she was tattooed.
Well, she married a syphilitic. I mean, what do you want?
Well, again, I don't give a damn that his mother was probably a street woman or a lady of the evening or just a fast chick. Who gives a goddamn? But see, he worked himself up into, because of his dog goddamn patriotism and the fact that he had no problem waking up an MP when he was running the Navy at 3 in the goddamn morning, you know. It was his doggedness that got him up there. Same thing with Benjamin
and his
Israeli.
You can argue, and I've read Churchill biographies extensively. I find him a fascinating character study.
He was. He's just crazy.
but he also is a manifestation of something that I think we would recognize today. He is a shameless self-promoter.
Mm-hmm.
He gets himself into scrapes. He got himself in. He did not go to any of the good colleges, you know, Jesus or Oxford or Cambridge or anything.
He didn't come for money.
He went to Sandhurst, and he came out of that a member of the Queen's Own Lancers. And of course, the Lancers were—they had a certain romance to them, but he was expected to maintain his own string of ponies, and that was the one that was his war ponies. Then there was the other string he had to maintain for polo play, and he was involved in the last great British cavalry charge at Khartoum, where he had his bacon saved by virtue of the fact that he had dinged up his arm or something, maybe even playing polo. But he had dinged up his arm and couldn't carry his lance. Lancers really used lances. Maybe I'm overstating things, but they really, really did. In the end of the 19th century, the British were still riding into goddamn cavalry charges with lances pointing out in front of the horses. But Mummy had sent Dear Winnie one of those newfangled Mauser broom handle pistols. And because he couldn't wield his lance, he took that instead and used that to mow down brown people when things started getting a little out of hand. And then, what did I say about shameless self-promoter? He reinvented himself as it would take nearly another century before Thomas Wolfe would reinvent the reinvention as the new journalism, where the journalist is a participant in historic events. So Churchill turns around and writes about that, and he writes well.
Yeah, he did. I mean, his thing about being a spy was pretty good.
Yeah, you could drop Churchill into modern America, or not modern America, but the modern world, and that sucker would be putting out 72,000 words of blog a week, because that's how he built his reputation. By the time he became First Lord of the Admiralty in the First World War, Gallipoli was his idea, and that didn't work out so well. And in fact, you can at least respect him for this. When he was sacked as First Lord of the Admiralty, and I think he was the youngest First Lord of the Admiralty they'd ever had, you know what he did? He outfitted himself and marched his happy ass off to the trenches. Name me one American politician in the modern era that would ever have the guts to do that.
Oh, you mean like Torture Cheney or...
Any of those.
Bush the Second or any of that. I mean, yeah, like I said, he was a prisoner of war in South Africa because he didn't like the Boers either, right? And, you know, he went up and down. Yeah, they were not Anglo-Saxon. You know, that was his strict thing. They were not English. You know, like British, they were not English, period. Even though, like Adolf, he didn't match up his own goddamn racial superiority, fucking theory. He wasn't a fucking Aryan his damn self, you know. And like I said, his surviving family members, who, I don't know if you know this, they've all agreed to not procreate. They've sterilized themselves. They've had no children because they don't want to pass on the bloodline. Wow. When they check their DNA, it turns out that they have a trace of North African ancestry, I believe Berber.
Well, I mean, we're human beings. Yeah. We do get around. I mean, going back to that story from a couple of years ago when the Concerned Citizens Council was having a hissy about Idris Elba playing Amway, the god of Swedish pyramid schemes or whatever it was in that Thor movie. there was a statement from the, and this is, you know, just because I study ancient history and shit like that. There was a statement from the Concerned Citizens Council that white Europeans must maintain their white European race. And I'm thinking, you twits. I mean, you unbearable idiots. Do you have any idea what Europe is consisted of? I mean, Jesus Christ, in Caesar's day, there were, you know, the whole of Gaul was divided into three parts, and those three parts had a million different Gaulish tribes in it, and that's before you cross the channel and start dealing with the Celts, and that's before you start marching your ass north and run into the Picts, who will surely gut your ass.
But Mr. Kincaid, they don't understand.
And then there's the Germanii across the River Rhine, and they're getting pressure. And then there's a reason in the First World War the Germans were referred to as the Huns, because the goddamn Huns overran the Germans, who turned around and overran the Gauls, who overran the Italians, and then the Vandals come down through fucking Spain and go eastward across North Africa, and ain't nobody knows who nobody is.
Except through culture, but mostly, and as you put it, you know, what that would amount to, ethnicity. But see, but even then, when we have, well, not you and me, but I'm saying, but when these discussions are brought up, what usually ends up happening? We get centered about what happened in, you know, the European subcontinent, right?
I mean,
Maybe we'll throw India in for fun.
All of these labels are pure, unmitigated crap. I mean, let's take the Indian subcontinent, for instance. The Aryans, I mean, for what, you know, I get a little crazy when I'm referred to as Caucasian. I ain't never been anywhere near the Caucasus. You know, I'm an Appalachian. If we're going to talk geography, born and raised.
Yeah, but that's where you were born. You know, where are your people from? You know, that's not an unfair question.
The Caucasus. Okay, so. Some pale...
As a point of origin, I mean, that's all. I mean, that's all it's supposed to be.
But I don't even know that that's a sure thing. But some pale people come down out of the Caucasus. They come over to one side of what we recognize as Afghanistan. They settle up in among, and they become the Medes and the Persians. And some of them keep moving into the Indian subcontinent, where they run into a whole bunch of brown people. And they're white. And you know, consider the length and breadth and scope of Indian culture. And by Indian, I mean, you know, the whole of the subcontinent.
But why? I'm sorry if I interrupted you, but why is, if you look at it as, you know, if you look at Asia as not just China, because again, you know, it's like I was mentioning earlier, you know, just so that we, you're clear of where I'm coming from. It's easy and it's cool that I can sit here and talk about Rome and Greece and what have you, but that's not the whole of the world. You know,
no.
In Africa, how many languages, how many cultures, how many nations? We didn't have the nation-state system. We had nations, right? In South America, we did have empires. The Mayans, the Aztecs, the Incas, they, you know, ran like empires. They forced tribute. They ripped off, you know, that they controlled trade and what have you, and they went to war with each other. At one point, they thought that the world was going to end because their war was so fierce. just some conflict.
Oh, I find the Andean peoples particularly fascinating because of the concept that they had of property, because it is so utterly alien to European or anybody else's concepts of property, of which I'm aware. Because when you were the Inca and your ass died, your palace was still yours, and all your shit was still yours. Your robes, your gold, your pots of coca leaves, your corn beer, your servants, everything was still yours, and your palace was kept, and your sorry-ass Inca mummy was kept on its little throne, all dried up and desiccated, and nobody, and there was no inheritance. You know, the next Inca didn't inherit all that the way the little British gets will inherit when Elizabeth II shuffles off this mortal coil. It was static, so you had every leader had to start over, which is a fascinating concept. But all I was saying about India, Angry, is that you've got this white culture that comes down and imprints on the people who remain there, and that's where the caste system comes from.
Well, yeah. But one of the things that, and again, the reason why I wanted to broaden the discussion a bit, you know, in terms of, you know, encompassing the globe, in terms of how we're thinking about this, is that if you look at the scholarship on this, because I've done it at periods, when they use the term Aryan, we got to remember Adolf and his pals like Otto, Ron, and the rest of the people that were doing the making up the culture under Hitler. I mean, sorry, under Himmler's direction. Yeah, for the New Reich, they took Aryan just like they took the Germanin. You know what I'm talking about? I mean, there's another term for the Essenes Codex, otherwise known as the Germanin.
Yeah.
Talking about, yeah, you know what I'm talking about, right? So they took that and turned it into this whole, these are the original German people, when they were really a bunch of tribes.
Right. There is no original German people. There's no original.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, just across the Ohio River from West Virginia, there's a little place called Gallipolis, Ohio, G-A-L, and I thought they named it after the Gallipoli Peninsula. But you know where the Gallipoli Peninsula got its name from? Mm-mm. A bunch of Gauls were settled there. And Gallipolis, Ohio is named after Gaul, not Gallipoli. And they both refer to the tribes that were extant in France. But Caesar tells us that he slaughtered the Gauls in their millions. And I have no reason to doubt it. But the history of, and it comes with the collapse of the, and these are things, Angry, that start out, these are the impetus for the motion toward, happens way the hell over in Asia. I mean, the more people on Earth are related to, Genghis Khan.
Yeah, I've seen that. Yeah,
than to any other human being on the planet.
And there's a reason for that, and I'll get to that in a second, because, you know, when we look at Asia, and this is the reason why I pointed out that there's a reason why India is the way it is, and then when you move to the Stans, their flavor goes the way that it does. When people think of, you know, Caucasus, most people I know for a fact have never met a natural Caucasian. I have. They're not white. They're not white. They're not blue-eyed and blonde. I mean, you know, there was
no. Like, you remember the iconic photograph of the Afghan girl on Time magazine back in the 80s?
Yeah.
Remember those ice blue eyes?
Yeah.
Know where those come from?
Well, she's. What do you mean in terms of the eyes itself?
No, the genetics. I mean, the genetics where those blue eyes come from.
I've seen two different reports from the Human Genome Project, but you tell me what you know.
It's the same reason that you've got an Iskandaria in Afghanistan. Remember, the Macedonians were a bunch of fair-skinned, blue-eyed redheads.
Okay, I get what you're saying. Yeah. Yeah, but again, this is going into what I'm talking about, because if you look at the scholarship out of India, they debate amongst themselves, what does Aryan really mean? And Hitler took that and stretched it. He took it and completely stretched it, sent people over to Tibet to measure noses and to make facial casts and what have you. They would have taken DNA back then if they could have, to try to force a connection that didn't actually exist, the same way they did with the Germanin and the Essenes Codex. They forced the history. But in reality, when they talk about Aryans, yeah, they were lighter in skin tone and so on, but they were not as what we would look at as being white. And when you look at Afghanistan,
no, I mean that's why I said the other night, angry, that you know, you wind up with the Scandinavian people being the way they are.
Hold on one second, because they
got driven into such, you know, lousy real estate.
Yeah, but who are they really? Who are the Sami people, and where did they come from genetically? A lot of people don't know this. Their DNA comes from North Africa.
Yeah.
You know, the concept of race is not scientific.
No.
But when we look at Afghanistan and we see the mixes of peoples, I mean, there are folks who are black. You would think you were looking at an African, to folks who are blonde and blue-eyed. But they're born and raised. They have no other understanding of a family history outside of Africa.
And that's why I say this is also complicated. And it is such utter bullshit to sit and try to say, you know, that one is one thing or another. I would personally love to sit and have a look at my matrilineal DNA. I think it would be absolutely fascinating.
But even doing that, we've been doing that, and a lot of people have, if they have the money and the ability, they have their DNA checked, and we're learning all of this. But we're still saying, as Homeboy mentioned earlier, well, we're in a post-racist society, and we're just going to keep pushing that meme, even though that's not how it is. It's the same thing with the U.S. It was not meant to be a...
Well, as long as we're using the term, we're still in the soup.
Well, until we talk about racism, until we talk about gender oppression, right, until we talk about, you know, why we have the forms of misogyny we do around the world, in the places, in the functions, and in the manner in which they flow. You know, what's considered abuse of females is different around the world. There are women that accept things that an American woman would never put up with, and then vice versa. There's cultural and historical reasons for why all of this is. You know, when I try to, you know, talk to people and they say, well, we don't know, you know, why is America violent? Well, you know, we have a violent history. Well, that's true, but let's look a little deeper. You know, Europe has a lot of walls, you know, to keep the other people out, right? And when you look at the other cultures that have high walls, they all have warfare.
But the question is whether it ever works, because the bigger the wall you build, all it means is you have to pay a little higher bribe to the guy with the keys at the gate.
Well, yeah, but the bottom line is when you're taking things from people and you're not sharing resources, you have to fight to defend those resources.
How thick were the walls at Constantinople in May 1453?
I don't know.
They had to bring, at least 8 feet, maybe 16. That was crazy.
I mean, there was thick walls like that. Sure.
Mehmed II actually hired, was he Hungarian? Maybe Bulgarian? A young scientist that the Byzantines could no longer afford to pay. He had offered his services to the Byzantines, but the Byzantines couldn't write the check, so he just crossed the Bosphorus, and Mehmed II said, "I got all the money you need." And so he built this monumental 15th century cannon. And they shattered the walls.
Well, look, he was like John Bull, the Canadian that is believed that Mossad took out not too long ago. I mean, he was making weapons, just like out of a James Bond film. He had some kind of super weapon, some kind of, you know, cannon. And the Israelis were not going to allow him to sell it to anybody but them, basically, you know. Or within their network, and when he decided that he was going to sell it to whoever the hell was going to pay him, you know, they got rid of him to remove the issue. Again, that's the story. But the reason I mentioned that, and there's two brothers that I could mention in the Greek world too, and I can't remember their names. But, you know, you mentioned Shakespeare. Nothing is new. Nothing is new. None of this is new. Intrigue is not new. Trying to figure out how to do brigandage and not lose your men is not new.
Shakespeare himself, although we know very little about his actual life, just bits and pieces, we do know that we're pretty sure that he was from a family that sort of quietly remained Roman Catholic through the Reformation via Henry VIII, mm-hmm. And you know, he lived in a time when people were drawn and quartered. We invented that, white folks. Because the papacy had sent Jesuit assassins across the channel to murder Elizabeth I. And so that's why you see a lot, I mean, there's a lot of religious iconography in Shakespeare that points to that points to a lot of that intrigue that you discussed. And you'll notice in Shakespeare's history plays, there's a lot of Roman Catholic piety. And this was stuff that was being played out, you know, in command performances before Elizabeth I.
Yeah, but
he got to hide behind it because, well, you know, this is just history.
Well, it's just history, but he was talking about Italy, right?
Oh, no. I'm talking about the history plays. I'm talking about Henry V. I'm talking about Richard III.
Well, yeah, I know, but I'm saying, like you said, he was able to get away with this because he claimed that he was a creative. And when he did write some of his, you know, more challenging things, they took place outside of that. You know, in other words...
Oh, yeah, and a lot of his speculative stuff, he hangs Italian names on people, you know, the Tempest takes place on some little island somewhere, sure. And a lot of these things come out, he sets them in Italy because he was actually drawing, he was drawing his subject matter from Italian tales. He drew Hamlet from a Danish tale. I mean, there was, you know, we would have pilloried him for being a plagiarist. Or at the very least, a thief. Yeah, well,
there's still debates, and there's been some court cases on whether or not he actually existed at all. So, you know, who really knows? But I like Shakespeare for a lot of reasons, and I've used him as a source to explain things in the cultural sense because there's racism in Othello, and it's blatant. You know, anybody who has any common sense can understand what's happening there. But a lot of folks do not look at colonialism and racism in terms of the
Well, look at Shylock and the Merchant of Venice, of course.
Now, I've used that, and every Jew who read it got it right away. But, you know, a lot of other folks who really have not been exposed to literature, because you really have to understand English in order to really get, you know, what he's talking about, and to have a historical sense of those times, which, again, is something else that, you know, where we were going. All of this stuff that we're talking about, without a historical background, without a sense of history, and where you as an individual fit into your own social sphere, and how your nation, you know, fits into these things, and the history of it in relation to others, how can you have an informed and reasonable opinion? You know, like I said, those conservatives that got on me last night who wanted to go on about Cuba, things I mentioned to them, like Luis Posito Carriles, who's still living in my...
Well, but again, see, I'm a nerd, angry, and when I... And yeah, I like my cigars, and while I was in Germany, I got to have my first ever taste of Cuban rum, mm-hmm. and it was a big deal. And, you know, I also had a rum and Coke with... Coke that had sugar instead of high fructose corn syrup and a little squeeze of lime, and it was wonderful. And you know, it was just my bucket list is humble. But when I think of that island, you know what I think of? I think that turned into the staging area for the genocide of the Americas because it was from Cuba that. Hernan Cortez sailed on an arguably fraudulent patent or mission, and in point of fact, it was a little Cortez had to turn around and go back to the coast because Spanish authorities had come for his ass.
Well, what happened with Columbus and his brother?
Yeah, but I see the staging area of a genocide, and I. Yeah, I'm such a little ray of sunshine, I know, but I can't not see these things. By the way, further nominations in tonight's little game. You mentioned Idris Elba will never be allowed to play Davy Crockett.
Mm. Or Winston Churchill.
Or Winston Churchill.
Well, for good reason. I mean, how the hell is he going to do that for it to make sense? I mean, if he's doing it in theater, okay, you know, on film.
Greg asks, I wonder if the actor would be able to portray that great American military hero, Colonel Sanders. I can see the movie Bowtie poster now.
Yeah, but he's a Kentucky colonel, or was a Kentucky colonel. That's not the same goddamn thing, but hey, you know.
And another of our fraternity of Greg's has pointed out he will not be allowed to play Bruce Lee in the reboot of The Crow, and he can't play John Wayne in any John Wayne movie.
Oh, no. Could you imagine if that happened? Could you imagine the fallout.
Idris Elba in True Grit.
You know, and see.
No, no, I want one of these things to happen because
I could deal with that.
No, I just want to come on the air some evening and say, listen very closely. You're going to hear Rush Limbaugh's head explode. We're done with Rush. His head blew up on the air today.
Don't worry. He'll get the ACLU to come and help him patch it up
again.
Know, hypocritical son of a bitch.
Yeah. But oh, yeah, by the, and something else to share with you from Carol. We were talking about genetics a little bit ago. And Carol said, after having traced my family tree, I've come to the conclusion that the Bakers are either the horniest or the friendliest people in the world. We're really mutts, and yes, I've found the black woman in my family tree. Good. Good, good, good. And, you know, I'm really intrigued with that DNA study, and I've spent a lot of time thinking about why it is that we have, why it is that West Virginia and Oregon, I might add, they indicated, the report I read indicated we're tied. West Virginia and Oregon have the whitest black folks, and South Carolina and Louisiana have the blackest white folks.
Well, I mean, I've been in Portland in now 20 years. You know, it's not as segregated as it used to be. Housing is segregated. A lot of, you know, intermarried people here, and so on. The entire Pacific Northwest is going to look hopper, you know, in the next, you know, two generations, because that's how things are going. I mean, there's going to be a particular look out here pretty soon. The entire, you know, from California up, you know, it's going to be very, very brown, you know, and it's going to have, you know, this entire
as a friend, as a person of color, a friend of mine used to say, very off coffee.
Well, I mean, that's one way to look at it, but then too. You know, in one sense, this is cool, but in other senses, it isn't, because, you know, colonialism is a bitch. Now, you'll have Asian women who, like, damn near 75 to 80%, and this can waver depending on where you go in the country, simply flat out refuse. Refuse. I'm not talking about that, you know, they have issues even with the color. They just flat out refuse to involve themselves with other Asian men from any background. And, you know, when I ask because being part Filipino, you know, when I'm with people, I'm like, well, what's up with this? And they're like, well, look, where am I going to go? I can't get anywhere in America with Bruce Lee on my arm. Now, if I walk in with, you know, Justin Timberlake or somebody, you know, or Brad Pitt or Chris Noff or whatever the hell, I'll get into those restaurants. I'll get into that balcony apartment. You know, they have said this to me. Now, I've known women in Africa, black women, who said the same thing. I only fuck with Arab guys. Or I only fuck with Frenchmen. Or I only, like Kenyan women I know, that I only fuck with Englishmen. Why? What is a black man going to do for me? What can he buy me? Where can he take me? He can't do anything for me. And, you know, and again, we don't look at the movies as really having anything to do with this. But I wrote a story about Susie Wong then 15 years ago where I pointed out that one of the international friendship clubs, remember them?
Yeah.
They never went away. They were saying, hey, you know, Asian women are easy to date. They, you know, they're this, that, and the other. And, you know, they pointed out that American films help and make it easier for you to date Asian women because – well, they make us look good. And when you ask the average Asian woman, like, you know, in my experience from the Philippines, you know, what is it about, you know, white men? I don't care what he looks like. And they're like, oh, he looks like a Brad Pitt. He doesn't look anything like Brad Pitt. Because they're constantly dinged with this message.
Yeah, and, we were doing ache work in D.C. one time. We were staying in a hotel out in Manassas. And this was the same hotel where I ran into the and I think I filibobstered on it when I got back, but the weirdo fundies. But the night before, I ran into a guy who was leading a tour group of Chinese tourists who were busing, I guess, all over the East Coast, and they were going to see Washington, D.C., blah, 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 blah. and so I sat down. I sat down and talked to the guy just because I'm culturally curious, and I try not to be, you know, a xenophobic freak or you know, talk down. I just want to know. And before long, you know, we're both sitting outside. We've both got a bottle of beer or whatever. And before long, he's telling me, he says, you would not believe the number of American men who go to China on business and begin second families.
Yeah.
And they and he said and he said it's not at all uncommon to see. Now I don't know if this is common or un. Our buddy Steve in China could probably tell us something. Steve wrote in just a few minutes ago, and he said, I never got into the contrived seriousness of the Bond movies. Far better, I think, were the spoofs on the whole mentality of this Cold War era genre, especially Dean Martin's portrayal of Agent Matt Helm, loosely based on Donald Hamilton's popular novels, The Silencers and Death of a Citizen. And then there was a, and then there was another one, there was another series that, that featured James Coburn.
Coburn, in like Flint. Yeah.
Yeah, Flint. Flint. Our man Flint. And
that's my favorite.
Steve notes that the Matt Helm movies also starred the incomparable Victor Buono as the evil genius Big O.
Yeah.
He was also King Tut from the Batman series. You know, I never know what, like I've said a million times, I never know what's going to pique the interest of people in these little conversations we have every night. But I want to go back. And, yeah, I do. I don't know if it's on Netflix or Amazon Prime or anything. I want to go back and watch some Matt Helm and some I thought Our Man Flint was better than Matt Helm.
I did, because I just like James Coburn, because James Coburn and Steve McQueen were cool.
The other James Coburn movie that I would love to sit down and watch, and I'd like to watch it with Ferg, is what's it called? The President's Analyst?
Yeah.
You familiar with that one? Because I remember seeing that a million years ago, and that just seemed subversive as hell.
No, you want to see a subversive film with James Coburn? Duck, You Sucker.
Okay.
You don't know about that?
No, no.
He and Rod Steiger are in Mexico, and Coburn is an Irish revolutionary. He's IRA, and he had to duck out, so he ends up in Mexico and ends up joining the Mexican Revolution. So he's a real revolutionary, but Steiger is just a bandit who he gets politicized.
Oh, damn, that just sounds fun.
Well, it's an Italian film, and Mastroianni did the music. So, yeah, it's not an American film in any way, shape, or form. It's very European. It was made in the 70s. You'll see.
And by the way, we got another note in from Steve in China just a minute ago. And he said, if you're going to talk about race in the 21st century, then you're finally only talking about the human genome, which ultimately is as different from any reasonable idea of race as politics is from biology. And why risk deluding yourself with language and its abuses rather than dealing with the contingent nature of mere things? Nominalism in the guise of the real is as old as philosophy or the labyrinth. We have tribal affiliations, in want of a better term. Beyond that, we're just immersed in politics, or perhaps confusing distinctions of race with racialist obsession. Travel itself does wonder for conceptions of self-worth, America's historical baggage, at any rate. Steve in China.
Yeah, well, Steve, I mean, you're pointing something out. I mean, only 70, at any given time, 17 to 22% of the American population has a passport. And when you ask people sometimes, wouldn't you like to travel? No. Regardless of ethnicity.
See, I think, because I remember when our babies were born, you know, the first thing, got to get her Social Security number. Got to get her Social Security number. Why not issue, okay, we're going to go through that much administrative hassle. Why not go ahead and issue them a passport at the same time? Why should it have to be a separate thing that's cloaked in elitism and costs $100?
No, and there's a reason for that, because a lot of people will probably leave if they had, you know, problems. But you have to also look at the downside. Now, just like I was telling my wife, we had lunch today, and I said, hey, you know, she's happy that the oil prices are going down, even though they're not really dipping that much where we are. But she knows, and she's not political, that oil is what, $60 a barrel right now, right?
Yeah. Oh, by the way, did you see what the Saudi oil minister said?
Which thing? I've been looking at statements for the past couple of weeks about this.
We don't care if it goes to $20 a barrel.
Yeah. Oh, well, why would they? They're the ones that are doing this.
Right. We can absorb that.
Now, you have to ask yourself, but look at Russia. The ruble is worth what now behind this?
Is it still plummeting like a paralyzed falcon?
It's still plummeting, and the Japanese cat that I talked to who's in finance, he says, look, I'm just going to tell you this because this is what I think is going to happen. He says, they're going to stop this. They're going to do something to raise the prices because everything would have to go down. your Twinkies in your bodega, right? All the crap you get at Walmart, it's not going to cost that much to ship these items anymore. It's not going to cost them that much to produce anymore with the oil going down like this. So the prices in the stores are going to supposedly, you know, if you're being fair.
Well, forgive me if I call BS on that. Since when have the Waltons ever lowered prices?
That's the point. That's what this fellow was trying to tell me. He said, look, man, the Saudis are doing this, and he says, I don't think that they're doing it because they want to, that there's manipulation going on about this because they want to hurt Russia, and this is the best way to hurt them. They also want to hurt China, who needs gas.
Well, the thing I read today, and Benedict posted it, pointed out that the Saudis are also rather peeved with us for attacking ISIS, which is may very well be Prince Bandar's private army.
Uh-huh.
And they're not at all happy about the fact that somehow or another, Iranian and American military jets are traversing the same airspace without shooting at each other.
Uh-huh.
And this is, you know, this all upsets a very careful, delicate balance that the Saudis have tried to put together for a time, but they're also having the salutary, from a human rights standpoint in the United States, they're having the salutary effect of absolutely crushing the shit out of the Bakken crude and the tar sands. Much more of this and the Keystone XL pipeline is going to be carrying fucking tumbleweeds.
Yeah, I don't even know why they want to, you know, continue to even talk about that.
Meanwhile, a couple of other things to mention. I'm not sure. I think we are in day 10 now, and talk about stuff that doesn't get mentioned on the news. Monroe County, Ohio, not too awfully far from across from the Ohio from West Virginia. Monroe County, Ohio residents in an area are out of their homes for the 10th consecutive day. Maybe they got to go home today. I don't know. But they were out for 8 or 9 days, weren't allowed into their homes because a well fractured near them and was spewing 100% pure, unmitigated, raw, uncombusted natural gas straight into the air. Did you happen to see that on any news sites you look at, Andrew?
Nope.
And I mean, it's a plume. I mean, it's the old movies about the oil boom days when the derrick begins to rumble, and all of a sudden John Wayne films. Idris Elba might be able to play John Wayne in that if John Wayne got enough oil on him to turn black. And so the plume of oil's just shooting into the air. Well, that's happening with natural gas over in Monroe County, Ohio. And for like 8 days, maybe 10, the people who live near it have not been allowed inside their own homes because the whole place is poison and might blow to Mars any minute now.
Yeah, but capitalism said fuck it.
Right, because money.
You know, capitalism said fuck it. You know, we don't really give a goddamn, you know. I mean, one solitary dollar. That's Monsanto's thing. We cannot afford to lose one solitary dollar. So when we look at the petroleum industry, I'm not talking about petroleum in and of itself, it's just a thing, but the industry itself, you know, are just brothers who, I love them, I love my people, and they mean well, but they're talking about the Illuminati all the goddamn time, and I'm like, BP's the fucking Illuminati, man. Explain how they could do all that fucking damage, and then, you know.
And then walk.
And we're supposed to, we're supposed to fucking feel sorry for, you know, Tony, whatever the fuck, because he had to, you know, he got in trouble because he took off to go watch his fucking boy's game.
Well, do you know what happened to Don Blankenship?
Oh, yeah, but.
Yeah, dude has brass that he carries in a wheelbarrow, okay? He and his Washington hotshot lawyer sashayed into the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of West Virginia after it had already been stated that a condition of his bail was that he remain in Pike County, Kentucky, or I think Mingo County, West Virginia, and he was allowed to go see his lawyer in D.C. That son of a bitch sashayed into court and said, Your Honor, I'm not happy with your ruling. I want to go home to Vegas for Christmas.
That's called white privilege.
That is called white privilege, except, bless her heart, Irene Berger looked at him and said, no, your happy ass is staying. And you know, they then turned around and appealed the decision.
okay, man. You know, nothing in the.
But here's the frustrating. But here's the frustrating part out of all of this. Okay. Irene Berger, who is a competent federal judge, she entered an order stating that nobody could talk about the case.
Yeah.
She banned anybody from being able to see the files. You can't. I mean, if you drive to the courthouse and go to the clerk's office, you can't go through the file. You can't look at it online. You can't examine documents online. The lawyers are forbidden from talking about what nothing. I mean, there's a total clampdown on First Amendment journalistic privilege in this case.
And if Castro did that, they'd be yelling.
Well, that's true too. Hey, angry brother, I got a roll. I'm going to try to create a little space for anybody else that may want to jump in on this conversation. It has been a dandy, and if I don't talk to you before the 25th, I hope everybody has some sort of a happy holiday out your way.
We do Festivus over here, but you enjoy yours.
Well, are you you're airing grievances tonight? Or is that what we've been doing?
Oh, no. I mean, if I want to, you know, I mean, with us talking, I mean, all of this is a really bad David Allen Cole song. I mean, I don't know how.
Well, this program's been described a lot of ways, Angry, but that ain't never been one of them.
No. I'm talking about the subjects that we end up, you know, whether it's you, Carol, you know, Steve from China, anybody that calls in and helps support this show. And I hope if you can give this man a Christmas present. He and Agnes could really use the help.
Well, it's not a Christmas present. It's just how we keep it going, and we're $310 to go tonight and $250 to go tomorrow.
Well, you know, try to, you know, dig into your pockets and send this man some coins. But, you know, it has to be discussed, and there are angles that are not going to be discussed because they don't fit into.
Well, where the hell else? Where the hell else is that? I mean, just this is not me banging on my drum or anything, but where the hell else, Angry, is this conversation going to take place?
Well, you talking about reasonable people or
well, I mean, it ain't happening on Fox, and it's not happening on the Premier Broadcasting Network.
No, there's media out here if you want to hear William Pierce, who is long dead, but if you want to hear that corpse, you know, continue to talk about how bad the minorities are and how white people are at the edge of extinction, I mean, you can still find that kind of crap all over. I mean, you can still find stuff about UFOs, Loch Ness Monster, Visions. You can find whatever you want out there. But in terms of reasonable conversation, we're kind of limited to you, Malloy, Bill Press, you know, Brad Blogg when he can, you know, get a spot on the air.
Rick Smith, I mean, yeah. I got to share this with you because I got this note from Ron right before airtime. Subject line, he's killing me. And Ron writes, I was listening to You Know Who earlier today, mainly because Sam Cedar's on vacation. One of his segments was devoted to an interview with, wait for it, Phyllis Schlafly. Sweet Mary. Does this guy really believe the progressive airwaves need to be polluted with this harridan? As far as I'm concerned, this woman is the female equivalent of dastardly Dick Cheney. What was really bad is I could see his head bobbing in agreement to nearly everything she said. To add insult to injury, at the end of the interview, he called her a national treasure.
Are we talking about Ed?
No. No. Ron closes, Bob, is it me, or could any self-respecting progressive liberal call this woman a national treasure? You Know Who is a closeted right-winger. And you know who is Ron from Raleigh Coat for Tom Hartman.
Oh, Tom, well, see, Tom will talk to people I would never buy. Well, if I did interview them, if they actually wanted the goddamn interview with me, you know, every time I've invited a fucking Nazi or some kind of, you know, hardcore Republican to come on the show and logically, without insulting me, explain your issue, not one of those bastards have shown up. So, you know, Tom will get them in there and he will make them feel comfortable and, you know, we can't offend them. See, I am up to school where fuck them, offend them when they're wrong. And when they insult us, fuck them, offend them. Because you're not really offending them anyway when you're telling them the fucking truth. Some people really are goddamn crazy. You know, they're not wrapped too goddamn tight. They're fucking crazy. But you don't have crazy on your show. We've had differences of opinion. You know, I mean, people I've discussed, you know, things with on your show in the chat room. But nobody's crazy. I don't have to worry about walking out, you know, the next day. I don't have to worry about people calling my house and saying things to me. They're not nuts. So in terms of that type of conversation, yeah, you are about it. So, you know, help this man stay on the air. Peace.
Thank you, Angry. Our buddy the Angry Indian there, accept no substitutes. It is 8:34. Yes, we are $310 away from tonight's fundraising goal, $250 for tomorrow, a total of $560 to go to be even with the week. Any help is great help. And thanks very kindly to John in Colorado, Johannes earlier in the day via the U.S. Postal Service. And thank you to Ed. Thank you to Ed at the beginning of airtime this evening. Lines are open. We're going to take a break. And I'm just not going to miss it. It is the last Green News Report of 2014. Brad and Desi going on vacation for the remainder of the year. We'll just go straight to that.
It's Tuesday, December 23, 2014.
Because it's time for polluters to pay their fair share to help solve this problem.
Washington governor proposes a carbon cap and trade system.
An alarming new report on the state of the world's oceans.
Plastic trash pollution in the world's oceans, even worse than previously known.
2014 is on track to be the warmest year ever.
Ever! Happy New Year. Plus,
Australian researchers created the most efficient solar panels ever.
Ever! The innovative solar energy breakthrough out of Australia.
All of those most innovative stories ever straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comments.
In the same way that all of our individual actions cause the climate to change so rapidly, we can all be part of the solution.
Yeah, we could, but then we'd have to, you know, do something. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, our last report was filled with nothing but good news, and I should have known that meant you were going to come in with all of this terrible news in the next report.
Well, hey, you know, it's the environment. It doesn't necessarily follow along with what you wanted to do.
Well, it should. Anyway, what do you have for us today?
Well, first, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's latest data says 2014 is still on track to be the hottest year on record. And year to date, global temperatures for the whole planet, January to November, are also the highest on record.
And to be clear, that is exactly the opposite of what the right-wing deniers on Fox News and everywhere else have been telling us for the last year or two. They keep telling us that the globe is getting nothing but cooler since 1998.
And one would like to think that if 2014 is the hottest year on record, it would end that stupid denier argument, but I doubt it.
It is Fox News we're talking about.
Another new report from NOAA finds that the latest scientific data from the Arctic shows that the North Pole region is still warming twice as fast as the rest of the planet, and that extra heat does have impacts on weather systems around the world, according to meteorologist Paul Douglas on MSNBC.
It may be turbocharging typhoons. We just had 5 Category 5 typhoons in the Pacific. It may be accelerating sea level rise. We are conducting an experiment on the atmosphere.
Meanwhile, in Washington State, the Democratic Governor Jay Inslee is taking action on global warming, proposing an ambitious cap-and-trade program to cut the state's greenhouse gas emissions.
It charges big polluters based on the amount of pollution they emit, because it's time for polluters to pay their fair share to help solve this problem.
Well, that sounds terribly reasonable.
The plan would raise an estimated $1 billion a year by auctioning off pollution permits to the state's biggest polluting industries. The revenue would go to transportation, schools, and clean energy development.
Now, is this cap-and-trade scheme a more effective way of curbing carbon pollution than a simple carbon tax? Charge companies for whatever amount they pollute the environment.
It's a good question. There are two big differences. A carbon tax just charges companies. It doesn't stop them from polluting. A cap and trade program caps the total amount of pollution and restricts it going forward. 270,000 tons or 5 trillion pieces. That's the amount of plastic that a new study estimates is floating in the world's oceans. About 700 pieces of plastic for every person on Earth. But lead study author Marcus Erickson on NBC News says they found fewer tiny pieces than they expected.
We found the salt and pepper size fragments were almost disappearing from the ocean surface. They're not on the surface. They could be somewhere else. And that's where we're concerned.
He says those small pieces may have sunk to the deep ocean, or worse, are being consumed as food by marine animals and birds, which means they could be passing toxins up the food chain to humans. Finally, some innovation news.
Finally, you're going to at least end the year with some good news, are you?
Yes.
Thank you.
A solar breakthrough in Australia where researchers at the University of New South Wales have developed a new method that converts more sunlight into electricity than ever before.
These new panels convert 46% of their sunlight energy into electricity. This new technology works by distributing the solar collection into three cells, picking sunlight up in multiple wavelengths, and then reflecting that excess light at a fourth panel. It's genius.
The technique uses commercial solar panels and was even confirmed by the U.S. National Renewable Energy Labs in field tests, which means it's not that far away from going commercial.
Now, 46% doesn't sound like a huge efficiency, but when you compare it to coal plants, they tend to get between 30 and 40%, and the same is true for nuclear plants. They also are only 30 to 40% efficient. So this new innovation puts solar right up with these other energy producers.
And the fuel is clean and 100% free.
And we will end this year with that clean and 100% free bit of good news. For much more of the stories we covered today and the ones we couldn't get to, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download us anytime via iTunes. Find us and follow us on the Facebook and the Twitters at Green News Report. From Desi Doyen and me to you and yours, we hope you have a wonderful holiday, and we will see you after the new year. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Couldn't let the last Green News Report of the year go by without running it. Happy holidays to you too, Brad and Desi. You did a heck of a job. And I don't mean like a heck of a job brownie. Let's make no mistake. 19 minutes before the hour, thank you very kindly to Brenda. Brenda just set up a new subscription, and we are now only $300 away from meeting tonight's fundraising goal. By the way, I did have a note from Steve, who kindly provided us with the bagels. He had a $25 challenge to put on the table if anyone would like to, that he will match. Remember the last time Steve put a challenge on the table, nobody responded, or near nobody responded, and consequently we missed out on the matching funds. But he's back. Steve is. Hope springs eternal, and he will match the next $25 that come in. So that'll take us from 300 down to 250 if folks will do that. Let's see. Of course, both lines are open now, 304-574-8178 or 304-663-HORN, 304-663-4676. Get you right into the program either way. Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid, Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N, if you want to jump into the conversation. I got a link to a Key and Peele bit, and I enjoy these guys a lot. Since we've been talking about, our game for this evening is roles Idris Elba will not be allowed to play by Rush Limbaugh, studio executive Rush Limbaugh. This seemed like a lot of fun.
Intermission!
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, Othello is my shiny!
F*** it, yeah!
Othello,
motherfucker! F*** it! What's up, Shiny?
Dead, white person!
Oh, this play don't seem dope to me, Martensian!
Verily, LaShawnee, verily!
Yo, and 'tis about time Shakespeare doth scriven the play that places a brother amongst the firmament.
That's my sight!
Oh! Who's your favorite character? Mine's Othello.
Oh, 'tis mine as well, 'tis mine as well.
Because they got Othello as a general?
I'm saying,
Alice, yes.
And Othello did the beast with two backs with that comely white maiden and gets not anyone speaketh against him! He's straight pimpin'!
Methinks things are looking up for people of the darker hue.
Damn straight!
Woo!
Hey, nani, nani, talking, hey, nani, nani.
Come on. Martensia, wouldst thou to borrow a couple of ducats to purchase a capon from yonder concession?
More, please.
You know I got a concealed Cornish game hand up in my doublet. Ooh, allow with me to partake us up in this day.
More, please. I don't know if I can...
Okay, okay.
The second act is about to begin.
Come on, y'all. Y'all heard the Usher. If I know Shakespeare, Othello's about to kill everybody up in this bitch.
How they gonna kill Othello?
Man, that trifling ass Iago, I knew he was up to some issue to kill Tim in the first act.
How they gonna kill Othello?
And how Othello gonna do himself in with a dagger? How does that happen?
Let me tell you something. If a brother killed himself every time he broke up with a white bitch, this world would be bereft of brothers.
You'll be talking to a skull right now.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Where's Shakespeare's at?
Shakespeare.
He's right there in
the way.
Okay. Prithee. Make way.
Prithee, make way.
Be gone, Sirrah. You killed Othello. A black man got it going on, and you shuffle off his mortal coil?
I say unto thee, that's a tragedy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, tis that not the troubadour, Kanye of the West?
What? Wait, oh,
no, wait.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for sending me that link and sending us that link. I'm keeping, oh, my. let's go to the phones. I think we got Bill with us. Is that you, Bill?
Yeah.
What's that?
Yes. Here, let me look. Which personality? I'm not sure, but it's me. I only got five of them, you know, personalities.
Well, you've worn a few out over the years, haven't you?
Yes, very much so. Man, that was a great conversation.
Well, thank you. I owe that all to Angry, no doubt about it.
Oh, you guys give me a lesson in I'm a guy who knows an awful lot about post-American Civil War, and my professor has taught me an awful lot about the Constitution. I love the things like when the Confederates were calling that it was the new American Revolution. There's nothing like a reactionary revolution, you know?
Well, the thing is, it's a revolution if you win. It's a civil war if you get your ass handed to you. Which the South did.
Well, a lot of them don't want to believe it. And I was thinking of you talking about movie. How about getting a few of these young black actors, and one could be Bobby Lee, one could be Jefferson Davis, you know?
Yeah. Okay. There's a couple more. Roles. Idris Elba will never be allowed to play by Rush Limbaugh, Jefferson Davis, or Robert E. Lee.
Yes.
Wait a minute. Well done.
Thank you. What I love about stuff like that is it's funny, and it points the finger at the stupidity of the people who are living out that shit. Irony, it's kind of what you call it, irony, or just pure sarcasm or what, but, I've always been a master of sarcastic, sick kind of remarks when somebody you came back with something to top it, you know.
Right.
But I thought that tonight was going to be the forum, you know.
No. That's tomorrow night. That's Christmas Eve.
Oh, that's tomorrow. That's
yeah. I'm glad you mentioned that so that I could bring it up for. Bring it up for everybody. The fact that, yes, tomorrow evening we will have a special Wednesday on the Front Porch Christmas Eve edition of the Christmas Eve on the Front Porch. There it is, Christmas Eve on the Front Porch Wednesday on the Horn.
There you go.
And we will probably carry overtime at least a little bit, if not, not till midnight, but maybe go to 10, maybe 10:30, 11, yeah. Depends on how the conversation's going. But I hope just.
You mean you're not going to midnight mass?
What time is that anyway, Bill?
I don't know, somewhere around 12, I guess.
Oh, okay, okay.
I went there, you know, I spent that, 4 years that, in that camp.
Is that standard or daylight time? I'm not sure. I mean, every time I show up for it, I wind up missing out. I miss Mass.
I don't even own an alarm clock, and it kind of bothers me. I don't know how the hell I get up, wake up on time in the morning, except I just turn on a sports station and listen to Johnny Manziel. That's all I've been hearing, you know. Because he's hurt, he can't play Sunday. A lawyer has a strain of something or other, and he can't play. Well, one of our dreams buried, you know? I mean,
oh, that's cold, Bill. That's cold.
Yeah.
I mean, can't we just back up and see what Bernie Kosar's doing?
Yeah, he's been controversial around here too because he was calling some. He was doing color on some of the preseason stuff and radio, and they got rid of him. Because the new owner, you know, the new owner who's governor, whose brother is governor of Tennessee, and of course, that guy has been so successful in the food business, huh? He's the purveyor of truck stop food. I remember eating in one place a lot, and truckers were sitting around me, and I don't know who's calling me, sitting around me, and they were talking, these truck drivers. And, man, that's all you heard was how bad their digestive health was, you know? So what the hell are you eating here for?
I mean, classic truck stop cuisine, Bill. I mean, they deep fry the salad, don't they?
Hey, I think so.
At least put it on the griddle and stir it around for a little bit.
I had a job in St. Mary's around Knoxville. I went down to some friends of mine needed somebody to play the German accordion there. And so I went down there, and we ate at a couple. There's one or two places that have a wonderful salad spread, you know, all-you-can-eat salad and all the things I should be eating, but I can't because of the I'm supposed to go to a wonderful party tomorrow night, but I'm not going there without a tooth in my head, you know. And so Ferg's got a birthday the day after Christmas.
He does. Maybe his mom and me should have been paying better attention, but so yeah, he does. I mean,
well, that's the way it goes. I mean,
I always try to make sure that we do something special on the day after. That's why I'm taking Friday off, and we'll go to a movie, go to dinner, something like that. It's his 19th birthday.
I haven't seen a movie in so long, you know. Of course, I wouldn't see it too well either.
I wasn't going to say anything, Bill. I mean, that was sort of. I'll leave that punchline to you.
Yeah, thank you. Well, it's because you guys lit me up tonight. That's because especially when you get into, you know, there was problems. Belgium broke away from Holland to set up a country for some reason. Of course, you know, this book.
Well, the European, if I recall my history correctly, Belgium was set up, what, after the Napoleonic Wars? To create a buffer state that everybody agreed thereafter no one would march across, and then everybody kept marching across it.
Yeah, well, supposedly that's what brought the English into the First War, but I think it was more than that. I think it was the German Navy was pushing them because the Kaiser couldn't spend enough money on the armed forces. And he had a problem, too. He had a withered arm of some kind. And, these guys went nuts, you know. I just got a copy of The Third Man, the dialogue, and that's going to be interesting, because I also got they sent me a long-playing Zither album, and I don't know what I'm going to do with that. I mean, I have a great turntable, but I'll probably have it.
Did you say Zither?
Well, yeah, the background was Anton Karas was playing the Bazooka all the way through that thing.
I'm trying to, honest to God, Bill, I'm trying to remember if any time in 10 years of broadcasting anyone has ever even used the word zither on this program. So, you know, that's
oh,
two.
Really?
Yeah, that's two for you.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, well, there's something about that zither music. I had a great grandfather who was from Vienna, and he was, you'll love this one, he was a Roman Catholic priest when he came here.
Did it wear off?
And he was working with, there was a lot of Austrian coal miners. Hey, there was a lot of coal miners from all over the world, you know. As we know from Late One, you know. God, what a movie. What a movie.
Yeah, isn't it? Yeah.
All the way around, I mean, when that gunfight broke out, the violence was so sudden. And so strong, I said, my God, because I've never been involved in that kind of a situation. You know, thank you. I pack heat, but that guy I had to use it only once. And because a 38 special with a 2-inch barrel, you better be standing next to somebody if you want to do anything to him, you know. And I didn't want to, but damn, there's nothing like being out 2, 3, 4 times a week. 3 o'clock in the freaking morning, you know? And the police, I remember the cops pulling me over. I had a buddy of mine in the car this was long hair days, he had long hair, and the cops said to me something about, is that your girlfriend? And of course, I had to bite my tongue, Bob, because I was going to say, but you ask your wife. But that would have, you know, that would have been trouble, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And, I had a guy steal the car I was driving, and me and a fella, we caught up to him. The guy was so shit-faced, and he tried running us over, but we got him out of the car, and it was a vicious scene as far as he was concerned. And now, you don't try to run me and the guy I was with over. That does not work well. But he had to pay the damages on the car and all that stuff, and but just something about working all night in a saloon, anything's liable to happen. And as I say, the bar owner's wife had a brother who was a hostage in Iran. It's like, and the brother played football standing next to Randy White, the husband of that. I said, yeah, how the hell do I keep meeting these people? I'm standing around here doing nothing, you know. And
what do you mean? I mean, that's the squirrel hunting theory of life. Go stomping through the woods hunting for squirrels, you'll never see a one. Sit down on a stump and start eating a bologna sandwich, and you'll have squirrels all around you.
Oh man, I used to sit on my front porch with a bag of peanuts for animals, and these critters would run up, put the front paws on my hand, and take the peanut, and boom, gone, you know. And I had like 6 or 7 of them. And finally, my one brother-in-law got me one of those crazy-ass windmills. I put some big screws through it, and then I would screw wild corn onto it. And there was nothing funnier than watching 4 squirrels riding up on an merry-go-round eating corn. I mean, that was a stitch.
You know you're really working for the laughs when you're out there pranking the squirrels, Bill.
Oh, yeah, I was my afternoon after work and all morning, and another thing I'd do is go to the library and get 3 or 4 books, and then I'd go to this restaurant that was supposed to have these topless waitresses, and I forget the name of the place now, but it didn't, that system didn't last. It made a big splash because of this so-called topless waitress stuff, and I'd sit there with my face buried in a book, and I must have looked like a real odd character, you know. I wasn't ogling the women. I'm reading a book. That's the way I was. Didn't have time for anything else, because if I wasn't reading, I was working on something. And you know what a house is like, Bob.
Yeah.
House and 2 or 3 vehicles. I had 2 trucks because of the band. And I remember the old lady's car. I pulled a radiator and the guy I know, he sold me a radiator for $1.25. I put the new one in, and my dear wife didn't even say thanks, you know. My second one is a wonder. I'm glad I don't see her anymore. My temper is not good enough. But anyway, I'll leave you because I was wondering what happened tonight. But man, you guys have a knowledge of what would you call that history that you guys go back a long way.
Well, some of it runs out east or west of history and turns into anthropology at some point.
Yeah, because I had no idea. I know North Africa was overrun by the Islamic religion spread out. It spread all the way to the Pyrenees Mountains and a couple of times as far north as Vienna.
Well, but that, you know, that's 600 A.D., Bill. There's stuff, I mean, there's migratory stuff going on during during and before the Roman Empire. I mean, for God's sakes, the Angles wind up in Britain, and they come, you know, they come from an area, I'm not sure if it's Holland or Germany anymore, but, you know, it's just, it makes sense because you're, if you just sort of start rowing out from you wind up in England, or you wind up on the British Isles.
Well, you know, Germany did not become a real nation until Bismarck's time.
Sure, exactly. Hey, Bill, we are fresh out of time. Gotta hit it.
Well, you have a good one. We'll talk to you tomorrow night.
All right.
And Merry Christmas to all, and all of you keep looking at your wallet, you know? Take care.
See you, Bill. Thank you, everybody. I want to announce that we have met the entirety of tonight's fundraising goal. Thank you, one and all. Thank you, Jay Cruzen. Thank you, Texas T, for matching Steve's challenge. Thank you, John in Colorado. Thank you, Ed. Thank you, Brenda. Thank you, one and all. And thanks to our all-volunteer staff. It's coming up on 1 minute past the hour. I got to get out of here. And, of course, always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Big Christmas Eve extravaganza on the front porch tomorrow night.